As such, I'm a VISTA volunteer, and as such, I'm charged with working to develop a sustainable project, one that supports people living in poverty in our community. The primary focus is to support their efforts to move out of poverty. And we all know that that benefits the entire community when members of our community can move out of poverty. Besides the substantial support of the City of Ferndale, demonstrated by the City's commitment to housing the Resource Center, we have developed a number of sources of financial support over the past year. The Lummi Nation was the first community sector to step forward in a major way to support our ongoing operation costs with a grant of $5,700. WeQ supported us with a $1,000 grant for general operations, and the Whatcom Community Foundation granted the FCRC funds to support staff in the amount of $8,400. Many individuals in the community participated recently in a raffle that we initiated at the Whatcom Realtors Association Giveathon, which happened in Bellingham in December, and we raised over $700 during that event for the other bank and the Resource Center. And whenever we participate in these events, we also raise awareness of the work of the Resource Center, of the need for the Resource Center, and of the possibilities of the Resource Center. Other organizations that have supported the Resource Center in the past year are the Chamber of Commerce, Windward High School, the Kiwanis Club, the Ferndale Senior Center Quilters, and several businesses, including Management Services Northwest. We are very grateful for every donation, whether in-kind or monetary. Our main goal over the past year has been to reach more members of our community. During the year, the number of people contacting the Resource Center has increased twofold. That's a 100% increase. We now average more than 100 people contacting us for help, for information, or with ideas of ways they would like to be involved in the community each month. We have made outreach to the Lummi Nation, one of our priorities, by attending numerous gatherings and meeting with a variety of Lummi Nation programs that serve their community. We've continued the collaborative efforts to bring programs to Ferndale that support our families. The Ferndale School District, Whatcom New Life Fellowship, and the Resource Center, this is under the leadership of the Resource Center, collaborated with the WSU program, Strengthening Families, to present two programs in the past year, open to all families with children who are 10 to 14 years old. And if any of you have ever had kids who are 10 to 14 years old, you know that that's a time of great change and possible turmoil. And so supporting families and learning to communicate is a major priority. Yes, you have that to look forward to. I know. Let's see, where am I? Each one of these programs, one was last spring and the other one was in the fall, was successful with about 20 families completing the programs. And parenthetically, this spring, the school district is going to be collaborating with WSU to present Strengthening Families in Spanish at Central. And I know that that would not have happened if the Resource Center had not done a lot of the previous legwork. So one of the roles that I see for the Resource Center is bringing people together and then saying, go off and do it. You know, make this happen. You can do this on your own. We have also actively supported the work of other programs of the Ferndale Community Service Cooperative, most notably the Other Bank and the Holiday Giving Store. One of our advisory committee members and one of the board members of the service cooperative, Galen Gump, created a database for the Holiday Giving Store, which substantially changed how they operated. And the receptionist at the Resource Center was doing all of the data input for that database. So it was a wonderful support for them. One of the most encouraging developments this year has been the growth seen in the advisory committee for the Resource Center, of which why do I want to call you guys Congress people? I've elevated your status. Council members, John Mutchler is a liaison to the advisory committee. It was originally conceived as a sounding board for the coordinator, and they have stepped up to being a leadership team that is taking responsibility for sustaining the FCRC. It's a great development. The organization absolutely needs the support and guidance of the community that we serve. We hope that their collective vision and efforts will continue to grow over the years until everyone in the greater Ferndale community knows where they can turn when their life crises overwhelm them. Likewise, when a community member has a sense that he or she would like to participate in the life of the community by offering something, everyone will know that the FCRC is the place to go to make it happen. Homelessness continues to be a major issue in our community, and groups are coming together to address it. We are beginning discussions with the Interfaith Coalition, with the police department, and others to increase access both to shelters and to traditional housing, both for families, transitional housing, both for families and individuals. I'm also happy to report that the Ferndale Community Resource Center just last week was assigned a VISTA for the coming year. So we will have another coordinator, right, thank goodness, who will begin at the in mid-April at the end of my tenure. I'll be stepping down as coordinator at that time. And just so you know, I'll be out of town for the month of May, but I anticipate supporting the Resource Center in various ways on my return into the future, because it has been a central part of my focus in the community for a number of years. And that sort of concludes that, but I wanted to make a plug also for Project Homeless Connect, which I talked with you all about last year. It's going to be held in Bellingham on March 3rd. This year, if any of you are at all interested in the issue of homelessness, I strongly urge you to volunteer at that event in some way. You can be involved in the planning of it. You can be involved in the day of for a couple of hours. Mayor Jensen participated last year, as you all know, serving food to and I can't tell you how much it buoys the spirits of the folks in Bellingham to see officials and people who are in public life from outside of Bellingham participating in the event. I think sometimes they feel like it's pretty much their bailiwick, the Bellingham is it, but it really is like, whoa, folks from Ferndale care. And we need to show that we care if we do in some way. And an easy way to do it is to volunteer for a couple of hours at Project Homeless Connect, and I will be giving you more information over the next couple of months. It's not till March 3rd. I don't think they've even started signing up volunteers yet for it, but I would really love to see your faces there on March 3rd. Yes?
You're talking about homeless in Ferndale.
Yeah.
Do we do anything cold weather shelters in Ferndale?
You know
Ferndale,
what? Funny you should ask. I was talking with Chief Knapp about that in the past couple of weeks. There's been a group of people who are interested in trying to support that. We do not have anything in place at the moment. I think it behooves us to address it as a community. When I talked with the head of Interfaith Coalition, Laura Parker, I may be getting her name wrong, she suggested that we begin by possibly transporting people who are sleeping in their cars or people who the police know are homeless into the cold weather shelters in Bellingham rather than starting a cold weather shelter here, because we don't really know what the need is. And besides that, it takes a tremendous amount of organization. I have a notebook that this thick from Interfaith Coalition about the volunteer organization that's necessary for the development of the cold weather shelters in Bellingham. So I think that might be a transitional way. How to do it is the question. And if you'd like to be part of that discussion, that would be great. Yes.
I think this council might appreciate knowing that our former mayor, Lancaster, approached
yes.
me about currently the availability of his lower floor of his towers over there for this
right.
specific need. So I thought that was very interesting.
Right. And I definitely appreciated former Mayor Lane Kessel's interest in supporting the homeless population here. We don't have good data on the numbers of people who are either in their cars or on the street. And so I've actually asked Chief Knapp to ask his police officers to begin documenting when they notice people who are sleeping in their cars, especially. I think that's the primary way that we see homelessness here, except for the school district's data that is collected by them regarding their kids, the students in the schools.
Further questions for Lucy? Lucy, I want to go backwards. So mm-hmm. I know that 2009 was a big year for you, but in 2010 you doubled that number?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's impressive but worrisome.
Well, it isn't just the number of people who are coming asking for help. It's people who are saying, where do I go for this, or how can I make this happen, or do you have any ideas about who I might contact to get a discussion going about homelessness, or whatever it is. You know, somebody has a concern or an interest in the community. So it's not just people asking for help, but it's involvement of the community in the life of the community, and that's what's important to note, I think. It's not just need, although the need that we've been seeing has been quite extreme, and I expect it to become more so with the cuts in the state support for Disability Lifeline, for example, which is slated to be cut. So this is people who are unable to work, don't qualify for TANF because they don't have children, and they will have no support if they don't get any, if they don't qualify for unemployment. So currently they've been getting something like the $350 a month. That went down to $285 recently, I think, in January, and it might be cut. The state is thinking about cutting it as of March 1st. So I don't know what we're going to see this year. It's going to be an interesting year to sort of follow. But thank you for your support. I really appreciate all that you do to support the Resource Center.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, Council, next up is, or, well, any more for the public commentary? Anything you'd like to come forward? Seeing none. Council, I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
I'd like. I just thought they have one item moved off for maybe a minute or two discussion. That's only the appointment of three members of the community to the Planning Commission. I'd like to pull that.
Okay, so pull Planning Commission. And let's, because we know the comprehensive plan is going to go, let's, we'll approve the consent agenda and we'll go right into your comments on the Planning Commission. So I have a motion. Did I get a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, motion by Councilperson Ingram, second by Anson. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Okay, I'll turn the floor over to Councilperson Mutchler.
Yeah, I'd like to begin by just making a motion that we appoint Susan Cole, Tom Black, and Phil Patrasik to the Planning Commission for a four-year term.
Sir.
All I wanted to say about that was I've grown to learn a lot of things as a council member, and one of them is the importance of the Planning Commission. I'm almost saying probably right next to City Council, this is a very important commission. And in a city full of realtors and builders and developers and contractors and architects, I was surprised that you had one candidate for to join the Planning Commission besides two returning people. And it was in the paper. I know you discussed it. And I just want to somehow convey to our city what an important commission this is and exhort those in the trades that are involved with land use and business that this is a very important commission. I'm also kind of curious what the council thinks of a former clergy member being at such a high level of government position, but that was supposed to be sarcasm a little bit there, folks. there you go. But that was my concern, is what an important position to be on the Planning Commission. I think these are three tremendous people, and I think they're good people, and they'll do a great job. I've attended probably half of the Planning Commission meetings, and especially appreciate these two that have been on before, Susan Cole and Tom Black. They don't always agree, but they're incredibly thoughtful people. And I also think that the new candidate will do a great job, too. So that's all I had to say about that. And I think it's very important.
Just on that, because John talked to me about it, and we had some other candidates that called and talked to me about it. The Planning Commission, back in history, used to be a once-a-month situation. And then, you know, we've had some pretty serious issues and some discussions, and they've really basically gone to a twice-a-month schedule for quite some time. So a couple of people just didn't have that time. And it's not just there are times where the Planning Commission packet, in terms of information to study, is more so than council, yeah. And I appreciate that Councilperson Goodrich is nodding, going, yes, that's exactly true. So we sat down and talked to three people, you know, and I basically always understand when people say, boy, I want to serve, but that's a lot of time. Are you ever going to go back to once a month or once every other month? And the answer was no. So maybe they can volunteer for something else or when their life changes. Pastor Petrasik, basically, his health is great, will be a very dedicated member, and didn't want to do this in the past,
but did not until he decided his life where he could focus a lot of time on it. So that's great. So good appointment. Appreciate that you approving him. I think he's going to be a great addition to the Planning Commission. Okay, we'll move on to...
Call for the question.
What's that?
Call for the question.
Well, that's right. We're going to approve those. Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries 5-0.
Mr. Chairman, when Council Member Munster pulled that off the agenda, I'm assuming that also pulled Mr. Callen off.
No, so I narrowed it to the planning commission.
Did you? Okay,
yes, sir.
I'm right. Sorry. I'll
make sure that was clear.
Okay, next up is the comprehensive plan amendment, continuing of the public hearing. So the same public hearing as we're at the meeting. Turn over to Yuri Burnett.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Council. I'm not going to start from the very beginning of the process, but I will give a really brief thumbnail sketch of what the transportation element is intended to do. It is a required section of the comprehensive plan. We are required to do it under the Washington State Growth Management Act. As you may have seen on the January 5th public meeting, we had a large poster-sized blow-up of all of the different elements that this transportation element must and does include. The elements intended to provide prospective planning over the next 24 years for transportation-related improvements and policies. What it does is identifies an existing level of service. For our purposes, the existing is 2008, because as you may recall, this process was started in 2008, was then delayed because of ongoing urban growth area issues, was restarted again in 2009, and then continued through 2010 to now. So the existing level of service is identified in the existing transportation system has been evaluated. There have been traffic counts taken. So we have a baseline. We then added on the projected growth citywide that we're anticipating over the next 24 years, and for the purposes of rather overestimating than underestimating, we did inflate some of those, or those figures overall, so that we had a system that was designed for more robust growth rather than less growth than would otherwise be projected. Based on that, we started to identify where different congestion points start to occur, intersections or corridors. And through public comments, through council workshops, we determined that our corridors, Main Street, Vista, Grandview Road in particular, should be looked at slightly differently than the rest of the streets in the city. So those, we are looking at the corridor travel time, how fast it gets you from point A to point B, as the primary function of those corridor streets. For the remainder of streets, we analyze the level of service, which is the way that we want our transportation system to run, based on the intersection level of service, how the intersections function, how fast you can get through those intersections, or how fast you need to wait. While our existing adopted level of service is a level of service D, as in dog, the new proposed level of service is a C, as in cat. The existing level of service that we see on many of our streets came maybe as a surprise to many of the people in Ferndale, and that is our existing level of service is relatively high. For the most part, the transportation system operates quite well, with the possible exception of some intersections and the corridor along Main Street. So based on that level of service and the projected growth, the Transpo Group, who was our transportation consultants, we have Patrick Lynch and Larry Totally here, started to identify what projects would be necessary to meet the proposed adopted level of service in 2034. The cumulative projected cost of those projects is something over $100 million. In addition to that, those are the capital project costs. Capital is growth-related, expanding capacity, more or less. In addition to that, the city has determined, or the draft proposes, that we prioritize the maintenance of our existing systems. And, in fact, we prioritize that maintenance above our capital projects with the philosophy that why build more when we can't maintain what we have already. Based on anticipated projected revenues for maintenance, we are able to close our budget shortfalls with the exception of the reinitiating our sidewalks and pavement rehabilitation program. That's a program that we ceased funding in full a few years back and is something that is proposed to come back online, recognizing that in order to fund it, we would need to find some additional revenue sources. That's maintenance and operations. Capital is somewhat different, and it comes from different revenue sources. We project that out of the slightly over $100 million total projected cost, which is, of course, subject to change over the next 24 years, that we would have a budget shortfall that would not be able to be entirely made up through traditional revenue sources. We further separated out our capital facilities projects and determined that we can come very close, if not completely close the gap on our capital projects with the exception of the proposed Thornton Street extension. The Thornton Street extension by itself would have the most dramatic impact to both the city transportation network and to the city's pocketbook. It by itself would cost approximately $37.8 million based on the most recent projections. What we identified at the January 5th transportation meeting was that, yes, it would have a number of substantial benefits, but in order to pay for it, we might need to look at non-traditional revenue sources up to, including, not limited to, vehicle tax, a penny gas tax, a voter-approved bond, et cetera, et cetera. The transport group and staff heard the comments that were presented on January 5th. The majority of the comments were in support of the Thornton extension, but many of those comments suggested that we break that extension up into phases, taking it down on the west side of I-5 to the 2nd Avenue roundabout first, and then possibly extending as necessary over the overpass later. In response to that request, the full project is still in the plan, and we would still be able to charge impact fees for the initial design and study to see exactly what it is that we're dealing with, but that the council, this council or future council, could identify a phased approach and put the individual phases into the 6-year transportation improvement program as necessary. That way, this council or future councils would be able to target a little bit more. The other major change, and I should note that the discussion of impact fees, while connected to this, is still a separate discussion that we will have next month. The other major changes that we made to at least the project list was that the Church Road extension, the South Church extension, while it is still included on the project list, is now included only as a development-driven proposal, so that when property owners in or around the area propose development or are annexed, the city could point to that as a project that would need to be completed. But the city would not pay for that project itself, would not charge impact fees for that project. We've also, based on the council's discussion, eliminated the Guinevere Street, which would have extended from 4th Avenue over to the west. I should also note that this is not the only comprehensive plan amendment that's up for discussion, though it's most likely the one that's going to get the most discussion. So I'm going to briefly go over what council indicated to staff and to the public in December 2010. First amendment proposed by Jody Church at 1467 Sunset Avenue would convert medium-density residential to industrial with a rezone from residential office to manufacturing. Council in December indicated that they wish to put that on the docket, and it is included in the ordinance, which is attached to the staff report. The second item was the northwest intersection of Slater and Rural Roads, converting it from industrial to commercial land use with a rezone from manufacturing to mixed-use commercial. City Council indicated that they wish to approve that as well, and it is on the ordinance. Third one, Griffintown Park and new library site. We would convert both of these to the public land use designation and rezone to the public institutional zone. City Council indicated that they wished to approve this, and it's included in the ordinance. I should mention two items which were not included in the ordinance based on the council direction. Again, since council did not vote, if council wishes, they could revisit this as they feel appropriate. First of which would be not to include a redesignation of properties in the vicinity of Hamlin and Sterling Avenues extending from Main Street north to Washington Street, Washington Avenue, not converting that from high density to commercial, with the goal of changing the zoning from residential office to city center. That was not included. And I see that I do have a
motion. Metzler?
It's slightly important, just a question about procedure. I would eventually like to offer an amendment that we revisit that particular designation, but decrease the area to just go to Guinevere, and I could more fully explain that. But I'm not quite sure where in this process I would make that a motion to amend the comp plan.
We still have the public hearing open, so I don't believe that you can do that until after the public hearing is closed. It would probably be when there are motions on the ordinance itself where you would then make either a friendly motion to the original or.
Thank you.
The next item also not included was an amendment to the land use element. This is a text change that would establish a maximum density in the high-density residential zones of 40 units per acre with the possibility of going up to 50 with transfer of development rights. Council indicated that while they like the idea of expanding densities, that the appropriate vehicle for that wouldn't be through the comprehensive plan, but rather through the individual zones themselves. And, in fact, council indicated that they might wish to expand beyond a maximum of 50 units per acre. That discussion wasn't included in the original SEPA, so if there was such a proposal, it would have to go back through the zoning text amendment process. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions. I know that there were some public comments that were received and that were handed out to the City Council in advance of the workshop from 5 to 6.
Okay, questions for staff and Councilperson Goodrich?
I have two questions. One is on the Thornton project. How can we collect impact fees and things on a project that aren't we limited to 6 years that we have to use those fees? And if we're not going to be building Thornton for quite a while, then how can we collect impact fees and use them on a project that we really don't have a foreseeable 6-year future to do?
I'm Larry Totally with the Transpo Group. Yes, you do have to spend the transportation impact fees within 6 years, but one thing about transportation impact fees is they can be pulled. There's probably 10 or 12 projects that we've identified in the preliminary transportation impact fee project list. So even some of the fees may be charged and collected initially for Thornton. Your highest priority project may be a turn lane or a traffic signal or even the traffic signal interconnect along Main Street may be your first priority. So you can pull those funds and spend them on that project first. You don't have to, as opposed to SEPA, you have to spend each piece that's collected under for each project on that project. Impact fees provide more flexibility, so you can spend them on your highest priority project as long as it's spent on one of those projects that you've identified and you've collected the fees for. You can also spend it on the design, the environmental review that you could get started with earlier. In there and spend that money. To my knowledge, and certainly all the communities that we've served, don't know of any community that hasn't been able to spend the impact fees that they've collected because there's such a demand for them. A lot of them use the impact fees as a local match for grants and other types of things out there to help leverage that money to know that they have a partnership to support economic development and growth through those. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah. I have a second question, too. emergency or the well, exactly right, like right now, Slater being closed has a major impact on our transportation here in the city. In fact, if we're a D, we're probably close to an F when Slater is closed.
Definitely.
Let's try to get here tonight for some
definitely.
Of this. Is there a part of this, I didn't see anything, to deal with situations like that, and especially if the county ever decides to raise Slater, we're going to be impacted not just for a couple of days, we're going to probably be impacted for months with that road being closed, of how do we deal with that in our transportation in the city?
Well, the transportation plan doesn't deal with that directly except to say you need to coordinate with your surrounding partners, whether it's Whatcom County, Department of Transportation, the Lummi Nation, and others, to coordinate those activities. Certainly when a major road's closed, then, you know, others pick up the slack. The traffic demand doesn't necessarily just go away commensurate with that. That was also one of the reasons, if you'll read on the Thornton Extension going across the freeway, is that gets another crossing of the freeway in the long term to provide another relief valve, if you will, should certain roads get closed or emergency vehicle access, as well as the potential for just connecting the different parts of the community without bringing them all through one bottleneck portal way under crossing. So you know, the other another strategy on that certainly has been talked about in the past was completing interchange ramps to Smith, and building that interchange out, which would then provide a different route. But a lot of that traffic is going to end up still coming up La Bounty and ended up in the same spot. And from our analysis, that was maybe that improvement didn't really address the benefits of the city as much as it may for specific parts of the county out there, or even North Bellingham out there. So from a perspective of what the city is willing to jump into and help focus on, we thought that the Thornton extension was better.
River.
So.
Yeah, the river. Yeah. Bigger bridge.
Okay, any further questions? We'll move to the public comment period. Businesses. Okay, so the public hearing is still open, so it's a continuation. I have two people on the list, and if other people want to go, we'll go right after that. So the first person on my list is Sue Remakulis. That's not what it says on my list. Pretty precise here. Okay, Lucy, you've been voted to bump Sue Remakulis and totally destroy the authority on my list. Welcome.
Hi again. My name is Lucy Morris, and I live at 2501 Mountain View Road. I think as a property owner in the possibly affected area of the Church Road extension, I'm a little bit surprised to hear about the decision that was made to, and I'm not quite sure what the decision was, so Yuri, I might have some questions for you. You said that it was going to be development-driven only, that it would be of no cost to the city at this point. Is that right?
That is correct.
And does that mean that it will happen only after that area is annexed, or if the property currently within the city limits to the south of the property that Sue and I and several other property owners live? Is it dependent on the Douglas Road development?
No. The Douglas Road development, which is owned and operated by Bill Kramer, would not have an impact on it. It would be if that area requests annexation, or if the city determines when that area is actually proposed for development by the property owners in the area. So if the property owners in the area continue to stay out of the city and never become part of the city, based on this plan, which of course is subject to change, it would not be a project that the city would initiate.
And typically we don't, in the past years, we haven't considered any annexation until it was a majority, if in fact not almost 100% of the property owners request to us to annex.
A Okay, I just want to be really clear about this because this has been an issue, an ongoing issue for the property owners in this area and people to our north, frankly, and other people who are concerned about their own rights as owners of property in the Ferndale area. We are not currently in the city, so it would not be proposed to be a project until there was a development project that was proposed on the currently the areas that are currently outside of the city. Am I saying this correctly?
Annexation not first.
Sure. Annexation has to happen first. Okay.
Excuse me. Couldn't it also be a condition of annexation?
Yes.
What?
Yeah, but we wouldn't enter.
A request for annexation comes from those property owners, and then the city could make it a condition of annexation. If you want to annex, we're going to require a road to go through there.
Okay, and who would pay for that?
Yeah, but it still has to come from those property owners.
Okay.
Somebody besides the city would pay.
Okay, somebody besides the city. So this is not going to be a city project. Okay. Okay.
since everything is subject to change, it could be that if the properties are annexed into the city would then reassess this document or the 6-year transportation improvement program and say, well, now that it's in the city, we will start looking at it a little bit differently. So we can't say for absolutely certain at this point.
I guess I have one other request then. The possibility of the Church Road extension is either discussed by city staff or a decision is made about it, I would request that that you communicate with the current property owners, because I think we've spent a lot of time thinking about this and preparing presentations for the city council and feel a little bit, not quite blindsided, but almost, you know, that this was, like, we had no idea that you were thinking of doing this. So I appreciate the efforts that you've made, but I would request communication, formal communication, when you make decisions.
But probably what we're doing with this action is throwing it back on you as a property owner.
I understand.
That you would control your destiny.
Thank you.
But that's if someone comes in and buys all your neighbors, with the exception of you, that could change.
Right. Got it. I think that's the end of what I have to say then. Thank you.
A couple comments from council members. Oh. Councilperson Ingram was first, then Mutchler.
So this is for Yori. If I understood what you said earlier when we were having our study session, being as how this is the direction we're going to go now, it is our intent to take that Church Road extension project off the 6-year transportation list.
That's not the purpose tonight.
He made the statement, and
I don't understand that.
That could be a decision that council makes later. Right now, it's basically saying we're not going to be the ones initiating.
But it will still be on the 6-year list?
It's on now.
I know, so will it be taken off?
I'm just pulling out, probably in May.
Starting in May,
we readdress our 6-year plan every year.
Right.
So starting in May, we'll start talking about this again with the potential for removal.
So would you please notify us at that time? Thank you. And you have our contact information, I think.
Sure, transportation plan is a public hearing. It's a public process.
Yeah.
But we don't know if there are things that affect us being outside of the city, if there's something that's going to affect us, I would appreciate.
Yeah, right now, I'm putting it on the May 2nd council meeting agenda. So, mark your calendar.
Thank you. I'll be in Argentina.
You can look online.
You can always check it online.
Okay. Thank you.
Sue will come.
Sue will come. Okay.
We'll also put that on Facebook and Twitter. So, if you're not on Facebook already, feel free to follow it every day. And I will also personally make sure you're emailed and contacted about it.
It'll Facebook.
Yes,
down there.
Councilperson Mutchler? Yeah, Lucy, before I go, I think Lucy's concern is, I don't want to speak for you because you've done such a good job already, is under what scenario could there be an extension whereby the property owners really don't have much control over.
Thank you.
Yeah. What type of pathway would lead to that extension where the property owners don't have any...
Buying on all our neighbors and requesting annexation.
Yeah. So if somebody came in and purchased everybody except for a minority, that's the scenario where that extension would take place, correct?
Well, there's another scenario.
If the development to the south also continues,
yeah.
No?
How about development to the west? If a developer were to buy the majority of the open properties all the way to the ridge, on the west, on the south side of Mountain View to the west, all the way to the top of the ridge, mm-hmm. And even if the five or six property owners say, well, we don't want to annex, but they're blocking all the rest of that, it takes, what, 60%? So if 60% of the value say we want to come in, you could be forced in, like it or not.
Oh, 60% of the property value. Is that it?
Correct.
Or not 60% of the owners.
It's 60% of the property value.
Okay.
Not the acreage, but the value.
It's value based on the assessor, is it not? Yes.
Yes.
There's another scenario, Lucy, and you might as well, you know, as long as you are asking that.
Yeah.
Those five or six properties are all on septic systems. And as the state and the county screw down the septic system rules, mm-hmm. you may be forced to go onto sewer, and we won't let you on unless you annex.
Right.
That's another scenario. That's the current policy of the city, not to allow the extension of services outside of the city limits.
Right.
And whether that's 10 years out or 30 years out, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I know that others are now dealing with that, especially in the North Bellingham area, that don't want to become part of the city, yet they're being forced to look at alternatives, very expensive alternatives, to their sewer systems.
Yeah, and this could be a very expensive alternative.
Oh, yes, and don't forget, in the development just to the south of you,
yeah.
And when we do the Church Road and Mountain View intersection, sewer will be just... to the north of you. It'll be on both sides of you.
Yeah.
And so at that point, sewer may be the very least expensive alternative, but the way you're going to get to that is through annexation.
And through funding a road. The property owners would have to fund the road
at this point.
Well,
that's all speculation.
Yeah.
Okay. But those are scenarios under which, you know, I've said this, but do I want to say this? Yes, I do. The city would be smart to go in and buy. Is there six properties in there? Five or six. City would be smart to go in and pay fair market value and buy all of those properties, build the road, and then sell the properties either back to you or to some other person. Rather than do Thornton Road because it's less expensive.
I might concur with you if the county were willing to upgrade Church Road to the south of the city limits and there were access to Slater Road directly. Otherwise,
I think that's a project that's all got to go hand in hand when that happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But the county has no intention of doing that,
well,
and there's no access to Slater. At this point, there isn't.
Two or three of the current county council members say, no, we have no intention. There's others that are saying, why aren't you guys doing this? So,
why aren't you guys doing it, but why aren't they doing it? That's
well,
the question.
I mean, they got to take care of Imhoff Road, or they're of Slater Road. It's flooded right now. So.
Just to note, as far as the costs of actually building the road,
let's give Yuri our attention.
As far as the costs of actually building the road, the existing property owners, unless they were proposing a development, would likely not be required to actually fund the construction of the road. They might be asked to dedicate land to the city, but it wouldn't be that property owners who maybe opposed an annexation but were compelled to come in would then also be required to fund a $500,000 or whatever it may be road, but instead to dedicate land so that the city could then fund the road and most likely add it onto our transportation improvement project list where we could then get funding for it. So we're not going to say, thank you for coming into the city. Now please write a check for $500,000.
As long as you don't mention the word LID.
Yeah, we don't like LID. It's for roads.
Okay, next up, Sewer Mackless. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I get really nervous up here, so I hope you'll forgive me if I read off my paper. My name is Sewer Mackless, and I live at 2493.
Can you just pull the mic down a little bit?
There. I live at 2493 Mountain View Road. I'm Lucy's neighbor, and you probably remember us. We've been here before with the same issues. I'm here to ask you to remove the Church Road extension from your six-year transportation plan. And I've just sat down and did pros and cons of having the road and not having the road. And I just wanted to present that to you all. And I did make copies of my list. If anybody wants one, I could pass them out. Or Yori could help me out there. I hope I have enough. You may not. You're at the end.
Yeah,
we're. I also apologize. I'm not a very good typist, so excuse all my little typos, please. I came up with three reasons that the city wants to put the road, the Church Road extension, through. The first one is to create another path out of Ferndale besides Main Street. The second one is that it eliminates a driver from having to make a left or right-hand turn to get out of town. And traffic engineers have told us in the past that drivers don't want people to have to turn because it decreases the flow of traffic. So they don't want people to have to turn left or right. They just want them to go straight to get to where they're going. And their third reason was that for the Church Road extension is that the commuters need a straight and direct path to get to Slater so that they can get to I-5. And that's my understanding of why the city wants that road. And we feel that there are many reasons why the road should be abandoned. The first one is if the Church Road extension was installed, it would have multiple turns before a driver reached Slater Road. And so, therefore, it's not a straight shot to Slater. It's three or four different turns to get from the intersection at Church Road and Mountain View to Slater Road. So it's not a straight shot. And so the traffic engineers you might think might have a problem with all the little turns that wiggle through our country lanes to get to Slater. Number two on my list is that if that Church Road extension were put through, it would go through two residential neighborhoods. Ours would be the first one it would go through, and then the second one would be south of us in the Skyview development, I believe it's called. And then it would go through three more turns to get to Slater, again, going through all the turns. And as it traveled through the residential neighborhoods, we would hope it would that people would be driving at 25 miles an hour. So that doesn't really seem like a thoroughfare to get to Bellingham if people are trying to get to Slater quickly. Number three on my list is the new intersection at Douglas and Main Street serves the same path of travel as the extension that you're proposing. It's already installed. It has signalization, and it would eliminate another slab of concrete that's going to create more stormwater runoff. And if you've looked south of us into the fields, they're all full of water. I mean, before you even get to the Slater Road problem, those fields are full of water. Number four, with the help of signage from the Department of Transportation, perhaps we could put up signs that direct our drivers in our community to use our new Douglas intersection to get to the freeway. If we just had a little sign that said I-5 that way, maybe folks would start using the Douglas intersection instead of coming through town at peak times. Number five on my list is that the county does not have the Church Road extension on their list, and we've talked to their public or the, to their engineer, and we've talked to several council members, and some of them were not on board with this, and the engineer had not even heard of the project, and therefore it's not even on their six-year plan. So we're in the county, the other end of Slater, or the other end of South Church that would be hooked to Slater is county. And so you've got two county properties but that you want to develop into city roads, but the county isn't even, it's not even on their radar yet to disturb those lands for your road. Number six on my list is the price of the Church Road extension. It's at about $2 million, I believe, if I looked at your chart correctly. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought it said about $2 million. And I wasn't sure if that's $2 million in today's dollars, $2 million in the six-year dollars, or in 20 to 30 years, is that $2 million? And so I think that's not real clear. I think with construction and utilities and litigation and all the homes that are on large properties down there, we have nice views. They're not cheap properties. I don't think $2 million is enough. But now that you guys have stated earlier that annexation would drive the cost of that road, then maybe that's a moot point and I shouldn't have even brought it up. But it was on my list, so I said it. And then the seventh thing on my list is we've been told several times by city council members and staff members that the Church Road extension is not going to happen for 20 or 30 years, yet it's on our six-year transportation plan. Number eight is that this project has been abandoned in the past for lack of benefit, and it will be abandoned again for lack of benefit, but yet it's still on our six-year plan. And number nine, the city's looking for projects. At least that was my impression from the last meeting I went to, that the city was looking for projects of low priority to eliminate from the six-year plan. And at the last meeting I went to, it was indicated that the Church Road extension was of low priority. Maybe that's changed from last week to this week, since other things have obviously changed as well. I don't know. Number 10 on my list is that the presence of this project on the six-year plan puts undue hardship on the families in the path of this project. There's a lack of permanence for us all. There's a difficulty in selling our properties and decreased home values. And one thing that other people don't think about maybe is that when you condemn a property for a road, once people know their property is condemned, they quit taking care of it. And we all try to maintain our properties, but maybe we'll turn into a big eyesore there at the corner of Mountain View and Church Road. Maybe. I don't know. The families that are directly impacted aren't the only people in this community that don't agree with this project. In 2006, we submitted a petition that we gathered signatures on to stop the Church Road extension, and these are signatures just that we collected in a few days. I think if we tried harder, we'd have a longer list of signatures on our petition. These are all your constituents and the people that voted for you that agree with us that this isn't the best way to go. We know that the council doesn't look at projects on a personal level. We know that you look at the dollars and cents and the traffic engineer studies, or and we know that you don't look at the hardships that it forces on the residents in that path. But because the project is tenuous, we believe that the right thing to do would be to remove the Church Road extension until that time in 20 or 30 years, as we've been told that this project is actually going to happen. Then when they're serious about pursuing the project, then put it back on your list. In the meantime, please take it off the list and let us enjoy our homes for the next 20 or 30 years. And then when we're dead and gone, then I guess you guys can do whatever you want down there. But but it just seems, you know, like if you're not going to do it in 6 years, then don't leave this hanging over us. You know, we're a neighborhood. We're not just people. You know, we've got animals and kids and chickens. You said chickens, Lucy?
Once again, if you don't mind, we're talking two different things. Six-year plan is not under discussion tonight. It is the transportation element of the comprehensive plan. It's two different animals. Six-year plan is, as Administrator Young pointed out, won't be come up until May.
But let's. I'll make sure I'm gonna keep. If she doesn't hear, we'll represent this letter on the May 6th meeting. I've written it. We'll keep your letters.
Forgive me. I'm very sorry if I meant the wrong
name. No, you're right. Okay. Anyone else would like to speak for it? Welcome, Mr. Lackey.
Thank you, Gary. Hi, my name is Chet Lackey. I'm an attorney. I practice in Bellingham. Last time I was here, you guys were approving a lease for the Boys and Girls Club. And thank you, by the way, if you haven't seen the facility. It's a great one. I'm wearing a bunch of hats tonight. First, I represent, Doug Robertson actually represents the Sangueras, who own two large pieces down by the freeway. Doug can't be here, so I'm talking on his behalf. I'm working with Albert Martini on the old Riverside Golf Course. My primary reason I'm here, though, on the hat that's most important to me is I'm the president of what's called the Sports Commission, and kind of the driver behind the project at the old golf course, which is hopefully, if we get this all done, will be a very large field complex to support all different kinds of sports. We are not the Soccer Commission anymore. We're the Sports Commission. So it'll be rugby, lacrosse, which is exploding, and a lot of demand for that, ultimate frisbee. We're playing frisbee golf out there now, if you want to take a look at it, and football. Boys and Girls Club is hurting for football fields. Huge demand for grass fields. We cannot supply grass fields adequate for this community, and we're countywide, but we're hurting. And this is a fabulous opportunity because you get the fields and you get the park, which is the 200 feet along the along river, which will become part of the Millennium Trail theoretically and hook into the city's park system. It's great for the city for this reason. One, I think it's zero cost if we can pull this thing off. The Sports Commission is capable of maintaining the park and the trail, so we'll work out some sort of a leasehold arrangement with the city to manage that. I give you that background for this reason, is I don't think you can do any of this stuff unless this region works economically for the developers in that area. There are traffic issues, there's water issues, there are stormwater issues that if you can work in conjunction and put this the old golf course into play and assist the developers, the money works. There's a symbiosis there that actually works. If you can't get the development, it's a way trickier deal. I don't know if you can pull it off. The county has indicated a willingness for some funding for acquisition and possibly even for development. If it gets acquired, I don't even know where the deed's going to end up. I don't really care that much. It's going to be driven by who the funding mechanisms that will support this thing. I can build it if I can get the dirt. It'd be nice to get some money from the county to build it. So the reason that I'm a little troubled with adoption right now of this comp plan, and it might be fine, but let me explain my problems. Is, Paul, you hit the nail on the head. This is all about LOS, okay? Everything else is a little bit of a sideshow. LOS isn't a technical decision. It's a political decision that you're going to make, and we're dealing in really your most congested corridor, this Main Street corridor, and yet we've got a plan that lays a relatively high level of service over the whole city, including this corridor. My experience is in most municipalities is in certain areas you're going to go to a different LOS, a lower LOS. What's the effect of LOS? Everybody says, well, it's just a plan. It's a 30,000-feet deal. Greg is right. To a large extent, that's true. But when I go to start doing development, I'm feeling like it's about 10 feet because here's what it does. One, it's impact fees. It drives impact fees. Two, potentially in your project side of this deal, you got CEPA issues potentially. Now we're doing this planned EIS, and it might hopefully eliminate most of the CP issues, but it can have an effect on it. It affects your concurrency ordinance. And whenever you, if you have to do any rezones or other changes in the zoning or other codes, you've got to refer back to the comp plan. It's kind of your starting point for everything. So if you make once you made that political decision, it's a C. You're not stuck with it forever, but it's going to be problematic, I think. I've got this zone is interesting in Seattle. I mean, we're in a mess financially here, so nobody's doing any development. The only real active players out there, I think, are in this corridor. And there are a couple of them that actually have active projects that are not givens, but they're pretty good chance they might actually happen in addition to the golf course. So you've got these players, and what this plan announces to these guys is that the city is going to impose an LOS that could be very troublesome. Now, I don't know if it's troublesome or not. It's kind of complicated stuff. The traffic engineers are going to have to tell us ultimately what this does to the ability to develop this corridor. Well, when I say the ability, you can always develop if you can throw enough money at it. But this decision to go to C just means the cost goes way up, in my estimation. At least that's my experience. Now, Greg says this is a C, but not a traditional C. So and maybe it's an okay C, but I've been doing this for 30 years, and my gut tells me that it's going to make this it's going to be too expensive, that it will make it so that these projects are certainly it'll affect them. Whether it kills them or not, I don't know the answer to that. I think it would be prudent to take a little bit more time to at least get that analyzed and decide. Because, I mean, that's really the big decision that you're making on this deal. I mean, if what we come up with and we conclude that you say if you adopt a C, you make the political decision that you want that kind of traffic, level of traffic service through that Main Street corridor, and financially it kills these deals, that's a political decision you can make. But you ought to know what the implications are before you make it. And I'm not sure we do right now. I don't like the sound of C from my experience with projects I've done before in terms of the cost they drive. So, you might concede that this one corridor maybe functions at a lower LOS. It's a very unusual corridor because you're kind of trapped on the freeway side with the two lanes, and then you really can't do anything going west because even if you widen the bridge, you still got the town of Ferndale, which you're not going to be able to pump much traffic through there. It's going to be congested one way or another, and maybe you look at an LOS differential. I don't know the answer to that, and I'm troubled by having this thing adopted right now for what I'm trying to accomplish. So if you could wait and let us get a look at it, I think we'd have a lot clearer picture of what's going on here. So you may work with it. If you adopt it, it may work fine. We may get through this plan contract, come back to you and say, guys, it doesn't work, and you can change your mind. But it's certainly going to make my life a lot more difficult in dealing with these folks that I'm trying to convince to write you a big check so that we can proceed with that planned EIS, planned action EIS. So that's. You guys got any questions?
Any questions for Chet? Councilperson Mutchler?
I'd like to hear a response from staff because we've talked about this very issue. I mean, we you know, how high of a standard do you have on the thing? Is this going to attract or is it going to deter? And I think it's a great question that you brought up. I'd like to hear some feedback from staff.
I'll start off and you can kind of – and I tend to agree with a lot of what Chet says insofar as we have the planned action EIS that hopefully is going to be starting up soon if he can pry the wallets loose of his other attorneys, clients. That is probably going to be about a one-year process. I think we talked about that before. And it's gonna really look at everything on the other side of the freeway, that is the east side of the freeway, all the way up to the railroad trestle or so. So it's really going to be that Axton corridor there, which is, I think, the issue that we're really talking about. The planned action EIS is going to look at a wide variety of potential development. Some of it very intense, millions of square feet, other not very intense at all, with the idea of trying to come up with a raft or a slate of transportation improvements that would be triggered over time
by ever-increasing incremental development. So that way, just like we've talked about before, you know, if we could have, when the Jiffy Lube was put in and when the little the farm place was put in, and then the, if all of those would have been put in all at once where Cost Cutter is, we would have a drastically different road system than we had when we were measuring just one impact at a time in isolation. And that's what we're trying to avoid here in the Axton Corridor, Main Street Axton Corridor, is that death by a thousand trips, that you only assess the trips that the dry cleaner is going to assess, and that's all you do without a context of a larger development. So hopefully by looking at the holistic measurement here, we can say if we live long enough, or if our kids continue on in our place, and the city continues to grow, what's the best thing we could do for transportation, realizing that this development is going to occur? And so that's what the EIS is going to do. And that, in a macro sense, that's what the comp plan has tried to do. But now we're doing it for the planned action in a very small, specific area with less unknowns. That is, as you say, we know the freeway's there. We know the river's there. We know what our streets are. We know what the land holdings are. So I think at the end of this year process, when we come back with the very specific transportation improvements with dollars assigned to them, as well as the triggers, you put in a daycare center, you put in a supermarket, you put in a drive-through espresso, you put in whatever you want, tell us the vehicle trips, we'll look up on the chart and see what you have to do directly and then what you have to contribute to indirectly. So I think it's quite possible that at the end of this year, we're going to have a very specific slate of improvements at the interchange, which may be very close to what Transpo's come up with already. Because there's only so many traffic improvements you can do at an intersection. Or it might be very more specific, and it could be a little different. But it'll have costs associated with it, and it'll have level of service-driven vehicle trips to trigger it. And I think at that point in time, it becomes a very clear business decision on the part of the developers when they look at this and go, oh, my project, I want to build this, this, and this. I'm going to have this many vehicle trips. Now I know what my impact is, and I'll make the decision whether I'm going to be able to do that or not. So I would say that I think the concept of the comp plan is valid. It's certainly better than the way we assess transportation impact fees now. I think our level of service is better. Is it too high? That's something for all of you to decide now and in the future. At the end of the one-year EIS, when we have the very specific improvements for this corridor, you will have a chance to not only adopt the plan action ordinance that will put these into place, but we will be in the round of the 2011 comp plan amendments. So, and along the way, we're just not going to show you this at the very end when we're done. You will know along the way, and as will the proponents, where the transportation improvements and where the costs are going. So I think this is a good opportunity for us to change the way we do things now in the comp plan, take the time and examine the corridor in the next year, decide specifically what improvements we want to have, and then you all decide politically whether those level of services are correct, given either the likelihood or the unlikelihood of developers who are willing to come in and pay those type of dollars. So, yes, I think we can adjust the level of service a year from now in time for the planned action EIS ordinance if you feel that that's the appropriate way to go. But you won't know that until we get there. So I think getting the comp plan done now, moving into the plan action, is the best way for you to have the best information a year from now, as well as the private developers to have the best information a year from now to make their own separate business decisions.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I'm confused then. My first thought is then why are we doing this tonight if we have in a year when we get the planned EIS, it may tell us something different and we have to change what we're doing tonight.
That's just for here. So
yeah, but the thing is, we're looking at tonight as setting a level of service for the whole city, if I'm not mistaken. And I can see the developer's point of view that by saying Main Street and especially around the freeway and stuff needs to be a level C, that could be a very cost prohibitive thing to do, or time, you know, to meet our concurrency issues of trying to get WashDOT and all that stuff in place to to, you know, if you're going to widen the bridge over the freeway, you got to buy somebody's. You're going to condemn WeQ, or are you going to condemn the tire place to buy some more land to get the extra lanes to, to build that. So it seems.
In fact, we've had these kind of conversations, and the issue that I have is right now many of our downtown intersections are A or B. They really are A, B, C. And right now we have a level of service D. So, and Transpose here, they can certainly correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that right now, given our existing comp plan, if a development comes into this corridor and they can show that they degrade our streets from B to D, they don't have to do anything today. They don't have to make one single improvement because we have a comp plan that has a level of D. After tonight, if you approve this, it'll be slightly better because we'll have a level of C with the corridor travel time, so we'll be in a much better position. But I think specifically for this corridor, if any of these big retailers are going to come downtown, they're going to have to do an environmental impact statement that will affect their project only. If you remember, that's one of the things that kind of doomed the Pioneer Plaza, was that all of those, it was arguably a very big project, but all of those transportation impacts were being borne by that one project. Now, when we look at this whole corridor in the next year, we will be able to apportion all of those impacts amongst many, many property owners that come into the town and pay their proportionate share. Rather than, my fear right now is that the early birds don't have to do anything because we have level of service above D, and the late birds, to use a bad analogy, will have to pay probably more than they should have, because they'll be the proverbial straw that breaks the LOS camel's back. So I think this new comp plan gets us in a better position than we are now. It allows us to adjust it as time goes on, and more importantly, it allows us to adjust it when we know a whole lot more about the Axton interchange, and we're able to proportion that cost appropriately between developers and property owners in that area. So I don't think it really harms us, especially since we have the ability once a year, at least for the comp plan, to adjust our transportation level of service. And soon you'll be able to talk about concurrency, which is another big issue. It's one thing for a developer to have to pay for everything today. It's a totally different, perhaps, business decision if they're able to spend 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 6 years slowly paying for their traffic improvements. So
we already have concurrency in place?
Right now we have immediate concurrency. But we're going to have a conversation about that, because immediate concurrency is perhaps a bigger detriment to large-scale economic development than an artificially high level of service. They really go hand in hand, and it all comes down to not only what do I have to pay, but when do I have to pay it. And for these large retailers, when they have to pay it is important, and for the smaller retailers, when they have to pay it is essential, because, as you know, if you have deep pockets, paying it all up front is not so much of an issue as if you're a closer margin or a smaller cash flow type of retailer.
Okay, Yori, and then Councilperson Ingram.
One of the things that Greg touched on right there was that right now we've got modeling in based on 2008, and so we've developed all of that, and we're ready to go. If we continue to delay it, we're 3 years out from our models and our data, and we're going to have to go back through and reanalyze and recapture all of the data. And with these type of projects, we need to realize that as soon as I take that data and then I walk away, tomorrow the data is going to be a little bit different. And Greg said the roughly right goal, where we've been talking about starting with the main Axton EIS and then possibly looking at Grandview or possibly looking at Slater, recognizing that we are going to go back into it immediately and capture more data for the Main Street Axton EIS. I could see making the same argument next November in November 2011 saying, you know what, if we're going to do Grandview now, let's delay doing the transportation element update until we get Grandview's data, and then let's delay and wait until we get Slater's data. At some point, we have to say we have the data, and we are in a better position now than we were yesterday by adopting this plan, but we're not completely there yet, and let's expand on that and get better data so we can continue with this living document and making it better from year to year. And I think that that's what this is intended to do. The whole discussion of level of service, how you want Main Street to operate, that is a policy decision where, you know, if you say we're better protected as a C right now in preparation for the EIS, or if you say we're better protected as a D, that's going to be your ultimate decision. But saying we need to get better data and so we should stop from doing this amendment now, I don't think that that's as valid an argument, because we're never going to have absolutely perfect data, and at some point we do need to make a decision to go forward or not.
I'll go to Councilperson Ingram. Before that, after Councilperson Ingram, I'm interested, and I think probably the rest of the council will be interested, in terms of surrounding area and surrounding cities, what is kind of a level, can you mention some cities, and what level are sitting at? Because right now, I mean, it's a very big question, C or D, and so I'm interested in just some other cities. Councilperson Ingram?
Well, if we adopt this amendment now, it allows us to change our impact fees now, or very quickly. If we wait, we're stuck with the same traffic impact fees that we're dealing with now, which we've pretty much all of us determined are not only enough, but not equitable, because they're different in different parts of the city. So, being as how we've got the ability to readdress the level of service pretty much any time we want to as a council, I don't have a problem with passing this tonight with the knowledge that when the planned action EIS results come back, we may very well say C's too high. We may very well say that and say that, or we may say that in this area, C is too high. We need to make this area a D. But we wanted to make downtown stay a C. I mean, we can pretty much do anything we want to, as far as I know. We don't have to make C totally citywide in every place in our boundary. I mean, go to where I live, and it's an A all the time. So I mean, it's like, you know, C three cars in one whole day. But I don't have a problem passing this, because it allows us to upgrade our traffic impact fees, our mitigation fees. And we really need to do that. So, that's all.
Okay, Larry Totally with Transpo Group. Wanted to touch on a few things, including the mayor's question there. First of all, I wanted to kind of explain how we got to the level of service C standard in the travel time corridor stuff. Transpo meeting with city staff, meeting with the city council, commission, both as a whole as well as the committees here, basically identified we'd like to kind of maintain what we have out here. I mean, I'll tell you, Greg's been pushing us. Level of service A is what we have out here, and saying, well, that's not really realistic. So we went through that process and set this up as a process of, here's one way you might be able to get something close to what you have and try to maintain it, especially with the throughput. We also heard that just how one intersection works isn't the whole thing. It's how the traffic moves back and forth from the freeway to downtown and up Vista and up our main streets and access out here. So we want to make sure that's why we use the travel time, the corridor base, through that. So if there's an intersection that's kind of slowing things down out here, we can address it through signal timing or a turn lane or other types of stuff. But we heard that, you know, we don't want it stop and go. That you get to go 40 miles an hour between the signals, and you're sitting at the signals for 4 minutes. Still 15 miles an hour, 20 miles an hour, but it's not what we want. It's not the look and feel of the community. Certainly you're in the position to pick a different level of service standard for individual corridors. You can pick them now. You can do it after the planned action ordinance. This seemed to be doable and feasible within the constraints out there, to present it out there. It's when we looked at, we did say, well, if we made it level of service D instead of C for signalized intersections in the corridor, we probably save about $2 to $4 million in project cost. If you look at the intersection, those intersections are the driving force both for travel time as well as for the intersection level service to operation at those. Those are the cheaper projects, as opposed to building a new Thornton extension or a new bridge or other types of things. So you can, to a sense, have your cake and eat it too, at least for a short time. As Mr. Young was identifying, the plan of action may have quite different land use assumptions that are in this transportation element right now. I can tell you, if you go up to millions of square feet, that's not in the plan right now, right in the quarter. It's spread around to throughout the city and its UGA. You take all that growth that's throughout the city and plug it in one in this corridor, yeah, you're going to have some different needs, and that's what the plan of action will help look at. And that may indeed say, well, in order to get there, we have to go to level service D at that location and also include more bike lanes and more sidewalks and other types of things to make sure that people can park once and walk between buildings so they don't have to drive across from one shopping center to another shopping center like people do down in Bell's Fair. You know, you go across the street, you don't dare walk in many of those cases. Out there, you get in your car and drive across. So from the look and feel, those types of elements would come in. The other thing I wanted to make sure is that everybody understood is that the interchange ramps themselves are under the State Department of Transportation. I-5 is a highway of statewide significance. Concurrency will not apply. It is level of service D adopted in the state transportation plan. The city can't change that. But the city can certainly say, if you get from the interchange to our downtown, going through these signals, we can pick the levels of service we want. And maybe at some point the levels of service at those interchanges will go to E and F, and the state still says we have no money. But yet the State Growth Management Act still says you, the city of Ferndale, will accommodate so much growth. So you're going to have to take that into consideration, both at the state highway system. And there's a lot of intersections and interchanges along I-5 and other corridors that do not operate level service D or better, even though it's in the state highway systems plan. Well, everywhere out here, it's in there. So it's a goal. It's an objective. But the state also recognized that. That's why they don't put concurrency on that. But they leave that SEPA thing to say, hey, if there's some mitigation out there that we can make it a little bit better and offset your impacts, we can ask you to help contribute to it. And that's why it's important to get the impact fees and concurrency programs in place so you see how they're working. So as you start changing things, you can modify them to better fine-tune what you're looking for. I do agree if you wait another year or whatever else, you're that much further behind making those decisions and seeing what's working on that process. It's not my decision whether C or D is the right answer out here. We're here to help you understand what the implications of that are in that process. And then your comments on levels of service in other communities. I do believe the city of Linden is level of service D. Bellingham had a volume to capacity ratio on its length. So it didn't measure even intersections. It just measured volume capacity on its roadways, and it had some that were level service F was okay because they were going to have to go to 7 lanes, 8 lanes. That wasn't the look and feel of their community. We Transpo assisted the city in evaluating different concurrency programs and level of service standards. They came to a multimodal component, especially for their urban centers, their villages and things. It takes into account the availability of bus seats, sidewalks, bike lanes. It's not a perfect system, but it's a different type of a system that's out there. It's the only way that they were going to build their land use vision out there without taking out parking or taking out historic buildings or other types of stuff, because if they left it the other way, they were only going to build bigger and wider roads. They didn't want to do that anymore. We've thought about that for the city of Ferndale, but as we looked at the data, you got a lot of really high level of service intersections and all. We do acknowledge the safety for pedestrians and bicyclists and the use of transit, but the city doesn't control those. And I can tell you right now, transit agencies are looking on everything they can do to cut service, not add service. But the plan is a blueprint to help people make decisions and do that coordination. Just because DOT doesn't have money right now doesn't say 5 years, 10 years from now they might not, or they can be part one of your partners to go after a grant to do some of these projects out here. Others may be federal government or others, and building multi-jurisdictional teams to go after grants as well as private partners to go in with those goes a long ways, in at least in the recent grant activity. So from that perspective, and then I think Wayne's level service standard is D as well, right in this area. But other communities, Whatcom County, it uses a roadway volume to capacity ratio. In its urban areas, its level service D or better. If it's rural areas, it's C or better. And they do look at intersections as well as roadways.
Okay. Before we roll into more council debate, we still have the public hearing open. Anyone else from the audience would like to speak on this component? Anyone else? Okay. None? Going once, going twice. I'm going to close the public hearing portion, and let's roll into council discussion then exclusively.
Did you want me to answer a question about impact fees real quick? Just a reminder to council that when we say that we haven't updated our impact fees since 1997, that means that the impact fees are based on projects that we wanted to do back in 1997. So in some cases, we completed projects back in 1997, but we are still collecting fees to pay for those projects. That's one of the reasons why it's probably a good idea, and I say that with an attorney who's not listening, luckily, why we do want to update our project list and our impact fees as soon as possible. The fact that they might be giving a deal to developers right now is possibly one of the reasons why we have not yet been challenged. So another reason for possibly updating the element as soon as possible.
Okay, council, further discussion? Explanation of to council, because they're going to vote on this component, or they explanation of their voting process right now.
Right. They can, if they want, vote to approve the comp plan amendments as presented tonight, you know, with the changes we made over the last few weeks. So you could do it with one vote, or you could break it out and approve or potentially modify some of the other comp plan amendments that we discussed and either deferred or altered.
Okay, Councilperson Goodrich.
I would just like to find out what the other council members' feelings are on the difference between a C and D of level of service. I'm in a way concerned about adopting a level C because of what we have on some of the areas of Main Street and things now. Would we be shooting ourselves in the foot as far as some smaller developments coming in or something? I know at one time there was talk about something going in on the Hagen property. Would we be killing, MacJack's to build their taco stand there, by doing a C today versus adopting a level D because of the Main Street area. And then if the plan DIS and stuff comes back and says it's not an issue, then we could always raise it up. I don't know. I'm really struggling with that. If we were just saying citywide, yeah, I can see the rest of the city, but I'm just concerned between the river and I-5, saying that we have to maintain a C there.
Councilperson Ingram is next, and Feria.
Well, I'll give you my take on it. My take on it goes back to something that Greg said. Overall, our level of service in the city of Ferndale right now is a D. Okay. We have areas that are B and A. So let's just say that the area on La Bounty between Main Street and Smith Road is probably a B, I'm guessing. But what if Joe somebody comes in and takes the lot across the street from the bowling alley and puts something rather large there? And we say, well, you just lowered the level of service on that road to D. He says, so what? Your city's at a level D. We don't have to make any improvements. None. Zero. Nada. That concerns me. If we have a level of service C and he takes it to a D, he's got to bring it back to C. In certain areas, on certain intersections, like the accident, the 262 interchange, if we choose to, after the planned action EIS comes back, we can lower that to a D if we want to. We can lower it to an E if we want to. But right now, we need to upgrade our traffic impact fees and start gathering dollars for some of the projects that we've got on our list. And I don't want to see somebody coming in, as Greg said, and putting a project in that truly impacts our traffic and not have to do anything about it because, oh, gee, I just lowered it to a D, so what?
I was just looking. Do we have the map that shows what the level of service is for those areas right now? Is this the one I'm looking at, figure 5, on page 15, I guess it is?
I'm getting a yes from behind me.
If you could read those.
Well,
he's actually in the body of the comp plan itself. It doesn't have that visual that we had for the PowerPoint.
I was looking at this one here.
That one. Does it? Can you actually read it?
Yeah, you can see it.
If you know where the streets are.
Because I think...
If this is the one, it says...
And what page are you on?
It would be page 15, figure 5. But it says that I-5 is a B now. I find that hard to believe.
Oh, the off-ramp?
Yeah.
Those are intersection movements. So there the...
I bet if you looked at it throughout the entire day, it probably is.
Oh, this
is
a PMP. This is supposed to be PMP.
PMP.
Well, you can usually get through in one light.
Yeah.
Well, there's to answer that one, the intersection itself, as you calculate using the highway capacity manual, if based on the volumes that go through each of the intersections, it'll calculate out that way, and there's some commentary in there about traffic queues backing up from, say, if you're getting off on the northbound ramp and traffic queues on the southbound ramp back into it, you can't process as much traffic in there. That's one of the reasons why we wanted to go to a travel time-based type thing, because that takes into the account of those traffic queues and how much you actually get through that process in here. So the corridor itself from the freeway to downtown has a speed of about 17 miles an hour, which would equate to a level of service C condition through the overall corridor with certain intersections operating out there. That's why those closely spaced intersections at interchange ramps, sometimes you get somewhat of a misleading, just a numeric answer out of it. And that's why we were trying to find a different way of measuring that.
This kind of throws me because to say that the freeway is a B and then we're talking about lowering it to C, but yet we've talked about already tonight those are D, so I'm confused.
No, the level of service standard for the freeway is D based on the state, and they would use the methodology that we used here to evaluate that, where we ended up with a B. That's the same methodology. We've talked to the state. The state's reviewed the plan. We've gotten their comments. We closely coordinated with them as well as other agencies.
Councilor Cesaria?
I just want to be – Paul, I think, hit on a few things that I agree with a little while ago. But I'd like for us to keep those higher standards. You know, I mean, what's to say that you agree with low-level service D and then, oh, well, it's not that bad. Why don't we just go a little lower? I think I look at how Bakerview was like 10 years ago when I first moved here and didn't have a problem with it. And then I'm sure one thing came in and another thing came in and then, oh, it's not that bad. It just was something else in there. You could talk to citizens that aren't too pleased with how that area is. I don't want to see that happen to us on Main Street. You know, you throw a little something in here and a little something in there and it starts bringing down your level of service and bringing down your level of service. We have to keep our standards up high for the sake of the citizens that are living here now, not just thinking, you know, it's going to deter, you know, too many other businesses coming into that area. That may not necessarily be a bad thing if it makes it so all our citizens have, you know, it takes them 40 minutes to get from the freeway up to their homes. So keeping it at C, I'm okay with for now until we have more detailed information. When we can change it, if we need to.
Councilperson Ingram, Hansen, and then back to Mutchler.
Well, I just wanted to address something with Councilmember Goodrich, and that's if you look at this chart, 262 is rated as a B. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's a signal controlled intersection. If you go back down to Slater, which is non controlled, it's F and D. Southbound's a D, northbound's an F. So the difference is that at 262, we've got signal lights, and you can come up off those off-ramps. You stop at the signal, light turns green, you're gone.
In theory.
Sometimes.
Well, yeah. Not tonight. Not tonight. But most of the time it is. I don't think I've ever sat through more than one signal there, ever.
I have coming out of Weekview to make the left on the main street.
I live on that side of the freeway, and
Well, see, the only place I go over there is I go over to the gas station at Weekview and stuff, but I don't think we've ever sat through a second signal light to get out on the main street.
Can I just make
I don't remember.
It does.
A quick response to that is that you're absolutely right. Yeah. For a signalized intersection, the methodology looks at all movements. So if somebody comes in and makes a free right turn, they're counted and have zero delay or very little delay. And somebody who sat through the intersection for a minute, you average those two cars, the average was 30 seconds. For an unsignalized intersection, it's the side street that's waiting because the through traffic doesn't have that wait. And so there's a different methodology in the highway capacity manual for both of those, and this plan acknowledges that. So,
Councilperson Hansen?
I'm leaning towards agreeing that we should set it tonight at a level C. As long as there is the understanding and the flexibility, from what I understand, as the planned action EIS comes along, that we may need to reevaluate certain streets and intersections at peak times and allow them to go to D. I agree with Paul. You don't want to have a large project come along and say, you know, I'm at a B now, and I'm going to create a D, A, B, C, D, and I don't have to do anything. On the other hand, if that large project becomes economically not feasible, then we have to weigh the issues, and we may need to make some changes to our comprehensive plan at that point and say certain areas are going to allow D. We don't. It scares me to have the whole area be D, and all of a sudden something happens and the traffic is at a D, and we're like, whoa, wait a minute, we didn't want that. Well, we're too late now, and I'd rather err on the side of caution at this point.
Councilperson Mutchler is next.
It was well said by my colleagues on the left. I think it's in all areas, though, it's always easier to lower a standard than to raise it once you're headlong into something. We've heard,
is it Larry or Patrick that just spoke? Larry.
And Greg spoke as well. Mayor, I was wondering if you'd give Mr. Lackey maybe 30 seconds just to respond to the other side on this thing. I very much value the perspective of developers on these things, and he's appealing for a lower standard. And I don't know, you heard a lot of stuff.
Consensus of council to allow Mr. Lackey to speak. We closed the public hearing portion. Consensus?
If he wishes.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Mr. Lackey?
Start the timer, though.
30 seconds.
Start your time.
Okay.
A lawyer that can speak for 30
good
seconds.
Good luck. Bob Tall, I'd be 2.5 hours. What the LOS means is like what Mel was saying, that somebody comes in and all of a sudden the street's a D. Well, that doesn't necessarily follow. What it means is that that's just the standard that we're going to be working toward. But from my perspective, and understand that really at the end of the day, it's just dollars, because if you're at C, your impact fees are going to be higher. Okay, may not be appropriate, because maybe that isn't an appropriate level of service. D is status quo. Okay, you are in fact increasing the standard, because that, you know, your current traffic method has locks you in at a D, so you're actually increasing it. Here's the problem that I'm having with this deal is that is that I don't know what the financial implications of this is. What it's going to do, it's going to terrify all those people that are actually looking at doing something there, which could be a very bad decision because they're huge money drivers. Okay, I mean, they look at the city of Ferndale lacks a tax base. You know, it's your bedroom community. This is your tax base. So I can't tell you what the effect it's going to be. I can guarantee it's going to be significantly negative. I won't get those checks on Thursday. There's going to be a bit of work to be done to convince people, because what I'm hearing here is that politically you guys are heading toward a very expensive infrastructure system out there. Look, at the bottom line, when you do a development, you start with the dirt cost, you figure out what's going to build, what you can rent it for, what you can sell it for, and if there's a profit at the end of the day, you do the deal. If there isn't, you don't. And if you make it too expensive, then why would they move from Bellingham to come out to Ferndale for the same treatment? And that's essentially the analysis that we're dealing with here. Right now, this is a pretty favorable jurisdiction to do business. I'm not saying your impact fees are high, low, or indefinite, different. All I know is when you start working with a C in a corridor like this, it's troublesome to me. And I could be completely wrong is the thing. If we had a little bit of time to look at it, and analyze, because we have a fairly good idea what the project could look like, we can say, look, here's what the financial implications are, and see, it works. But once you've done it, we can't even come back to you, if I remember, the GMA for a year. So we're going to be burning tons of money with the prospect that this thing's just financially not viable. You know, I think it's a terrible decision. I think you give us a couple of weeks, we can come back, analyze it, and say, folks, if you go to a C, here's what the financial implications are. Please give us a D. You know, if on the other hand, once it's a C, we're going to have a – I don't think they move around as easy as you think. My experience is that there's an institutional inertia, and we're going to have to wait a while before we're going to be able to make that move if it's appropriate. You're really going to muck up what we're doing in that corridor. Real simple. Now, what you could do, I suppose, is just pass the plan – and see everything else and reserve this corridor for a couple weeks. You know, that's one way of doing it. I wish I knew the answer. I'm just guessing is the problem, because we just haven't had time to evaluate what the actual impact of that.
What does 2 weeks give you? Explain that again.
Well, we can take a look at we have a fairly good idea what the plans are going to be, what kind of traffic they will generate. We can make some pretty good assumptions, at least as to the properties that we represent, and then with that, we can take a look at what kind of traffic costs we're anticipating so that we can analyze whether or not the whole thing makes any financial sense at all. You know, that's the problem, and I don't know the answer. You know, it very well may work just fine, It's going to be really tough because the way this thing plays out, it's a lot of money that's going to get expended over the next year getting these projects moving along, both the money expended for the EIS and a lot of pre-development preparation work. It's just going to be expensive. And with the prospect at the end of the day that the C stays and we can't afford C, you know, that's going to be hard to get people to move. It's a tough world out there in the real estate development business because nobody's doing anything because there's no financing and there's no markets. These guys are rolling the dice because they think there's going to be an economy here again, and they think there's going to be markets. But there's only so much willingness to go out on a limb. And so, I understand that it isn't all about development and everything, but I think for the city of Ferndale, the way that situates, there's a lot of the positives certainly way outweigh the negatives. And if you had to go to a little bit lower LOS, I think this is the appropriate place to do it, because urban areas, as the folks from Transpo said, tend to drive at a little bit higher LOS standard. And maybe you're just dreaming that you're going to be able to hold that at a C forever. I think you are, but that's where the problem lies. And I don't know whether this works or not is the problem. But what I'd like to see is at least give us a little bit of time to take a look at it and see if I look at that. The I don't think 2 weeks is going to freeze out that data. What do you guys time do you guys meet anyway? Are you twice a month? So if we could reserve at least the LOS on this corridor for a couple of weeks and let me take a look at it. That's a little more than 30 seconds.
Councilperson Ingram is next, then our administrator.
Well, this is for Mr. Lackey. You've heard this evening from pretty much most of the council that are here that we have the ability to readdress the level of service in that corridor. Once the planned action EIS comes back, we have the ability at that time to open this back up.
Not if it's part of the comp plan. The comp plan amendment you can only do once a year.
All right, I'll let you interrupt.
You can do once a year, or you can do it more often if you consider it somewhat on a, what's it, not emergency, but is it emergency?
Yeah.
Emergency.
So I don't know what giving the 2 weeks, and I'm not opposed to separating out that area of 262 and saying we'll give that consideration in 2 weeks if we can legally do that. But we've basically been saying all along that we're more than willing to readdress the level of service there when we see the planned action EIS. If it says, well, you know, if you want anything to develop here, you can't hold this level of standard. I don't think anybody here would say, well, then you can't develop. I think everybody on this council that I talk with, anyway, on a regular basis, knows the importance of development on this area.
Can I get a show of hands so I can talk to my guys?
We'd absolutely love to capture more than 16% of our tax base.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't see where there'd be a big opposition to it. But I don't know can we legally say we're going to pass this comp plan amendment with everything except 262? I don't think so.
No, you need to do something.
Yeah. So I think
calm down.
I think from my standpoint anyway, you could feel quite confident in going back to your folks and saying, well, they're going to put it in as a level C, however, they're more than willing to talk. And
I don't know if I'm a large scale developer that would
I'm sorry.
All right, Mr. Young, who's over here today?
I know.
Lloyd Zimmerman, too.
I wanted to address a couple of things. One is the 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, I don't think we're going to have any more information for them to make their decisions than according to in the plan of action. The reason being is I need $50,000 from each one of them, and I'm only going to allow Transpo to do a wee bit of work until I get their money.
No, we'll do that on our own.
Right. And so what we need to do is do this planned action EIS. If they want to do a project individually, all of these developers and property owners realize that it's going to cost them $200,000 in a year of time at least to do it, because that's what an EIS costs and that's how long it takes. They all realize that grouping together, it's only going to cost them $50,000, and we've already started the process, so we could probably do it faster than they could do it. So what they're getting is a marginal cost for an end result that will be faster than they could do it themselves. But I don't think, even with me wanting to get the money out of them, I don't think the level of detail necessary for this corridor from a transportation standpoint could be done by Transpo in 2 weeks to give them the surety of cost that I think Chet and the others are hoping for to make the go, no-go decision. So I think if we wait 2 weeks and start the planned action, I don't think they're, but maybe Transpo can tell me what they can, why an EIS would take a year and we can get their transportation information in 2 weeks seems bizarre to me, but you guys are the experts and you know how long these things take. But more than anything else, I think that the council members are true and correct when it comes to the philosophy of the city when it comes to development. If we do this, if we adopt this at level C, we go through the planned action, and we find out that the improvements necessary to keep a C are absolutely financially unrealistic, I would be the first one to come back to this council, and I think this council would be willing to consider alternatives. But I don't know if the two-week delay, I don't think is going to get your clients what they need to make a go, no-go decision.
Okay,
or Chet respond if he wants to. You worry?
I was just going to add a couple things to that. One of them, when we're talking about cost, I'm assuming that it's impact fees, or is it the actual mitigation that would be?
Well, we don't know what the form of the ordinances will ultimately take. I'm assuming that it's going to be improvements that will give you credit against impact fees. I don't think the city will see any money from this group because I think they're going to be doing so much in the way of road improvements that they'll eat through the impact fees. But what it's going to drive are the nature of those road improvements. And at a certain extent, the businesses just can't support them, and I don't know whether they do or don't. I think in 2 weeks I can have a pretty good idea, though, Greg. It isn't with Transpo. You know, we'll figure that out elsewhere.
Because what we've heard is that the difference in terms of the project between an LOSC and an LOSD, there really isn't any difference at those intersections in that Main Street corridor. That it's the same sort of project. Now, the specific projects, if it's a roundabout or just a signal, we don't know yet. But the other thing that Transpo just mentioned is in the draft under Goal 7, Policy G, which currently reads, as appropriate, the city will reassess its level of service standards, transportation concurrency management program, and other development regulations based on growth and funding level. If we change that policy to say, with the completion and adoption of the plan to action ordinance, the city will reassess its LOS, transportation concurrency, et cetera, that makes it an actionable item where if we do not do that at the conclusion of the planned action, then we are not following our comprehensive plan and then can thus be challenged. Recognizing that for these projects, they're not going to have been able to actually start turning dirt because they will have had to do their own environmental impact statement. It's basically saying, since we're going to get there first, if we do our planned action, we must reassess, and therefore then we can go forward with that, and we will have more than a couple weeks to reassess.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand there'll be a reassessment at the end of the planned action. The problem is the interim and, you know, the cost of doing these things, the soft cost, is extraordinary anymore. I mean, it's a big deal. And so when you're sitting here with a very large unknown at the end of the day, I don't know the answer. I really don't know what the reaction is going to be. But it's troublesome. And I believe that if I had a little bit of time, I could really soften that a little bit. I think we have a pretty good idea of what the risks are associated with that. I don't understand that the C thing, and I don't have time to have it explained to me tonight. If we could get our arms around it, we can get comfortable with it, and it's just so that you can just analyze what the risk is. Because in a couple weeks, if I come back to you guys and say, look, we've analyzed this, and here's the range of the risk, we think this is going to kill this deal, and here's why, and show it to you, I'd like to be in a position to do that. On the other hand, if it looks like C is manageable, we're going to say, go get them. You know, we're happy. We're on board. I apologize. I should have been in this close sooner, but unfortunately, I do a transaction business, and all my practice is in December, and I'm so busy I didn't get to this until just recently. But that's not your problem, but it has created a bit of an issue for this little planned action thing that we're doing. I don't want to inconvenience you. I think it's a very bad idea to do this until we've had a chance to work through this issue.
Council, further discussion? Councilperson Goodrich?
Staff question. Is there any reason why we could not postpone this till the first meeting in February? Is this something that has to be addressed tonight? Or I know you would like it to be done and over with, could we, postpone this or whatever till the first meeting in February?
From my perspective, the GMA and the challenges and all of that, doing a comprehensive plan amendment only once per year, which typically means you can't do it more than once every 12 months, we're already potentially into February. There's no bright line that I know of, where clearly the city is working on it and there's been a reason why we have delayed it. At some point, though, there is, you know, clearly we should either, you know, vote or delay. And I don't know where that is. I don't know if it's at 2 months, 2.5 months. It's probably up to the courts to decide where.
So could they vote for every other component and just exclude this component for 2 weeks?
They need to adopt one amendment to update the comprehensive plan per year. So they could not do a partial. No. They could, again, do similar to what they did on December the 20th, where they indicated a preference. But other than that, we've also closed the public hearing.
Closed the public hearing. So, but they could do a preference on all other components of the comprehensive plan with excluding this one component.
I think that they could, in theory, do that. Our city attorney indicated that was okay to do previously, so I'd imagine it's okay to do this way as well. As far as the public hearing, though, one of the things to consider is if, as a result of this, we do change from a level of service C to a level of service D, the public would not have an avenue to comment on that change. There may be a way to reopen it, in the city clerk is saying.
It's a legislative hearing, and under the state law, it's most specifically for comprehensive plan amendments. The basic requirement and the theory behind this and the point of it is just to encourage public participation. Because a legislative hearing is less formal than a quasi-judicial hearing, it should be completely appropriate to reopen it if you feel that, you know, if you feel it's appropriate to do that. You could offer up more public comment, or you could simply just invite Mr. Lackey back for his own presentation. It's up to you the way you want to do it.
That was impressive. Who hired that guy? Council, further discussion? Councilperson Mutchler?
Well, I'm also thinking, too, I mean, what if they come back, Mr. Lackey, and I like the project. I mean, I got 7 kids, and what an awesome addition to Ferndale, all that sort of thing. But even if it does come back with, you know, we can't do this at level C, I'm still not so certain council shouldn't still go ahead with level C. I mean, it's not just about one project. It's about the tone and tenor and commitments to the city. And so I struggle a little bit with delaying the comp plan decision tonight because it's a significant project. It's an important project. But I struggle a bit with that. That this would drive the levels, this one project would drive the levels. I'd like to know generally how other projects, I mean the entire area would be driven by this. And that's why I think the Plan DIS is important in all this.
Why don't we take a break so we can get our, we don't have very many students, but we always promise to get the students out here. And then we'll immediately come back and tackle this issue. So we'll take a 5-minute break for one student.
What happened to all here? Every we're going to end Suvi sitting here. We need more time. I think I really pissed the super knuckles off.
I don't know. could be wrong.
But if you like the concept of stimulus, you know,
we can do something.
At the peak PM.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it takes a couple times, a couple cycles to get through.
Today, it took me 10 minutes to get from my house to New York. You know, that's like less than a quarter mile because of the
fire. Because they closed down.
Okay, it's not every time you'd be coming up and over the freeway. That traffic is so bad because of the red lights that back up during the time.
Make a motion. I want to move stuff along. Stop every all discussion.
All right. Our clerk found a 6-year-old can of. It's not edible.
It just will make it flat, right? Isn't that all that'll happen?
Chambers for like 3 years.
Really? Oh, I'm sorry.
Well,
that's give me a little more.
That guy was such.
Okay, we're back in session. Planning director would like to make a statement.
One of the things that we've been talking about here is we're talking in concepts where, gosh, you know, psychologically, C sure sounds better. Well, psychologically, D sure sounds better. One of the things that I think would be a happy compromise, understanding that we are going to go back through the planned action ordinance, is adopting an LOSD, as in dog, for the corridor, the Main Street corridor east of the river, and then allowing the rest to run.
Just as an amendment
to it.
We would vote on the whole comprehensive plan and an amendment. They'd have to propose an amendment to the comprehensive plan.
Switching it to D.
Or the Axon corridor.
One of the concerns that we have is by delaying it for 2 weeks and then delaying it possibly for another 2 weeks, we don't have a definite end. And that's one of the things that we're seeking here. Knowing that we could then reanalyze it. At some point, again, we need to say this is good, and we will reanalyze it later. But a D may be something, and I don't know whether or not Mr. Lackey would want to say whether or not what his perspective is. But
I think we've heard from him. Councilperson Feria.
I'd like to make a motion to accept the transportation element of the city's comprehensive plan.
The whole comprehensive plan,
with the level of service C in there.
Level service of what?
C, as in cat.
So whole plan with level service C.
Second.
I,
further discussion? Councilperson Ingram?
I would like to amend, make a friendly amendment to that motion, setting a level of service D for the Axton corridor.
I'll second that.
I guess we'll have to be unfriendly.
No. Yeah, he's correct.
There was already a motion, and then he is simply asking for friendly. If she declines it, you can
do a regular amendment, right?
You can amend it, but she doesn't have to accept it.
You have to vote on the amendment like first.
Can't be friendly.
Then I can't be friendly. Then I make an unfriendly motion to amend it.
That how that works.
There was a second.
And there was a second to that.
A clarification on the original motion, where we have a C for the corridors right now, but then we have a D for the intersections as proposed right now for the unsignalized intersections.
Well, I should have said it. I wanted to pass it as it was presented. As probably would have been easier.
Yeah, okay. Discussion on the amendment. Councilperson Mutchler.
Is this a motion, the final motion, on the entire comp amendment right now?
No. It's just on the amendment.
This is on the amendment.
This is not,
but then the next
one. Parts on the amendment.
So this is to go, this is specifically to go level D
on the Axton corridor.
Axton corridor.
Which east
of the river.
East of the river to the highway.
Correct. Question or
I want clarification.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I second this because I kind of like this. I was concerned about this area and development of stating it as a C. I like this kind of compromise. Instead of saying C for the entire city, we've kind of broken out this area. And so I can support this. I just cannot support a whole C for the entire city.
You mean D?
For
the discussion on this motion, Councilperson Feria?
I guess I'm trying to look out for the 11,000 citizens that we have that currently live here as opposed to just one project that's coming into the city. So trying to have that higher level of standard for the sake of everybody is kind of the direction I'm coming from, which is why I'm not in support of
you. One project, I was looking at it as any projects that come in.
That's what I would hope, but that's not what we've been discussing for 2 hours.
Person Mutchler.
Does a level of C service in corridors like off the highway, is that generally discouragement to developers? Is that what we're being told here?
We're being told here.
Yeah. I'd say
it's really place specific. There are some places in the world, in the U.S., where it would truly be a detriment. There's other places where there's available land, there's right-of-way, where it could be done probably a lot easier. All of this costs money, but I don't think that you could say just blanket or pick any city in the U.S. that a D means a project doesn't come and a C means it does come. It's really specific, and that's the whole concept of the plan action was to specify the issues for that corridor.
Which means we can come back at this after the plan action.
It
holds them up, and they're telling us.
Well,
possibly.
They would have to do an EIS anyway. So I don't think it holds them up from a timing standpoint.
Okay, discussion on the amendment. Councilperson Hansen.
The amendment says the Axton corridor. It does not say specifically 5 yards off the Axton corridor. What is the Axton corridor? From curb to curb?
The clarification would be corridor number 1 shown on figure 3, which identifies the Axton corridor and the Main Street corridor, I'm sorry, which stretches from the I-5 interchange west to 4th.
And the maker of that amendment agrees with staff's clarification?
Which restate that?
Figure 3.
It's on page 9, and it's figure 3, corridor number 1.
Can we state for Paul so he hears specifically what you say?
The Main Street corridor would be a level of service D from the interchanges west to 4th.
Section 1.
Paul,
that was the intent of your...
Section 1.
Okay. Councilperson Mutchler? Does this amendment need 3 or 4 votes?
What's that?
Takes 4.
4. Thank you. Okay, now, excuse me. I want to make sure that I have this correct, so I would like to restate that if the motion would be to provide a level of service D at corridor number 1 of figure 3 of the draft transportation element, which stretches from the I-5 interchange west to 4th Avenue.
Mr. Clerk, on page 10, we actually have text description of it. I'm sorry, table 2, 4th Avenue to I-5 northbound ramps is the number 1 Main Street corridor.
Table 2 on the top of the page.
Thanks, got it. Up to speed. Okay, further discussion on the amendment. Seeing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
Aye. That didn't work.
3-2
Against.
3-2 Against.
Okay, amendment fails.
So now vote on the main motion.
Okay, vote on the main motion. Councilperson Mutchler. I'd like to make an amendment, and this goes back to, I know we're all tired. This is a lot of fun because I'm tired too. The Genevieve Hamlin.
Guinevere.
What I'd like the council to consider is we declined to change that 12 acres to a commercial city center zoning, and I'd like to revisit that, considering cutting that in half and just extending that zoning from Main Street up to Guinevere, which would be, I think, less than half the acreage. And the reason for that would be it would be consistent with what I believe the city's been trying to do for a while in terms of identifying it, the appearance and the density and what it wants to do downtown. It would be affecting a significantly less number of the homeowners up there. In fact, I believe in talking to Director Burnett that there would be only one homeowner that spoke against the change that would actually be affected by that property. Now, let me tell you why. I'd like to make the – let me make the motion first so I can continue discussion. So I make a motion that we change the land use designation from multi-family residential to commercial – high-density residential to
– residential office now.
That's the zoning. To commercial to the city center – zoning that we had talked about a few weeks ago.
I'll accept the friendly amendment.
I'll second.
So a straight line using Guinevere as the... And I believe Director Burnett has the map up there. Anything north of Guinevere is out, anything south
currently
of Guinevere is in?
Yeah. And let me... Can I continue, Mayor? Tell you why I thought that was important.
Can we do that without another public hearing?
Yes, we can.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago when we met, I something caught my attention I didn't think about until later was that there is currently an application to build a physical therapist business on this property. And I can point it out over here.
Sterling and Maine.
Yeah. Which would be eventually inconsistent with the city center zoning. We can't stop that, and we shouldn't stop that particular project. But my concern is, I thought we could just wait a year and come back at this, is that if we leave it residential office, we have the potential of continuing to have people buy home. They've purchased this home, going to tear it down, put up an office. We're going to continue to have that. It's going to make it much more difficult for us to eventually zone this, would change the land use to city center or to a commercial. And so this seemed like a compromise that would leave the frontage on Main Street consistent with the other side. You can see on this a little bit here. So, So you can see what it was before. I'm suggesting we go across here. Currently, I believe this is the property that would have the physical therapist.
Yes, sir, it is.
Yeah. So already this would be a non-conforming usage of that, and I think you're potentially going to continue to have different things developed there that are not going to be consistent with the long-term vision of the downtown corridor there. Again, this would affect a lot less of the homeowners, probably not make some of them.
So we can continue discussion. Is there a second to that?
Yeah, we have
yes, there was.
There was a second?
Yeah.
Sam, you got it? Okay, further
so
discussion?
How far down would it come, Yuri? You got your pointer?
Yeah.
To Maine.
It would come down to Maine, but how far east would it go?
About the same.
To right there. Here. And I actually have another map that I can call up really quick that might show it a little bit better.
It's pretty easy on that one to see it.
And across
it would have the parcel boundaries on it. Cool. I apologize as I try to find it.
Tired, Yuri. I'm falling asleep on you here in a minute.
This would be the proposal where we have the red parcels identified. Because of the way that the parcels are laid out, this parcel on the west is slightly above the Guinevere right-of-way. This parcel over here, Dr. Benke's parcel, is a little bit further above. So council, if they wanted to go in this direction, could adopt this layout, could also go up north on the east side, or could potentially go south on the west side.
To me, yours, the least amount of pain, but still giving us the frontage, you know, which is really, because it's an appearance thing you're looking for when people, and users thing when people are coming through the main corridor.
If you're just looking for frontage,
what are you gonna,
do
about the
house? If you're just looking for frontage, why are you going all the way back then?
I had two questions.
Burn it.
I'm sorry. What was the question?
Well, if you're just looking for frontage, then why are you going all the way to Guinevere?
Can you specify, like, just these plats?
I
think because it seemed like an easy line when we were talking about it before.
Yeah.
To do it as a street.
But I'm a little bit concerned, because if you're concerned with the appearance of the corridor coming into the city from the west, right across the street, you've got the biggest eyesore that's ever been created by mankind.
Careful now.
You should talk to your job about making those kinds of statements. It may never be finished.
one of the reasons for using right-of-ways is because that way, if there is a conflict or the appearance between different uses, you don't have them sharing a common property line. That way you are allowing more flexibility where you have the right-of-way. In this case, you do have that, though, on the west side and then on the east side, where you would have properties adjacent to each other that might have different zones, and also to the west here. You want to minimize that as much as possible, but you can't necessarily prevent that.
Okay, Councilperson Goodrich.
I can't support this. I did not support it when it was proposed for the whole area, and I cannot support it now. I think it's there are other areas. If we were looking for developing the city core, there are other areas that I would rather look at that are more currently maybe industrial or not as residential as this area is. So. I can't support this.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Well, you know, I this is not a residential area right now. This is zoned residential office, and somebody right now could put a 70-foot building right in the middle of this thing. We're zoned to do that. It's not really short-term or long-term protected as a residential neighborhood.
Yeah.
If council feels like that's what it should do, it should downzone the whole doggone thing to residential. It doesn't make sense to me to leave it in this very mixed kind of zoning right now, especially when, it, as Mr. Cole pointed out to us a few weeks ago, it's a very unique piece of property. It's adjacent to the city core. It's the first piece of land you get to that's above the floodplain. And I think it deserves the extra attention that on this matter. So that's my thoughts about it.
For the discussion, or are we ready for a vote?
Just a real quick question of Yori. I'm a little uncomfortable going all the way back to Guinevere. I would draw the line closer. I would probably go up, if you start over on the left, I'd go a couple of parcels up, take that line, come straight across, keep coming. Now I'd drop down, come across there, then I'd drop back up, and then jog and go along that those property lines. I wouldn't split a piece of property. But I do see the advantage of having any properties that front on Main Street being commercial properties. The rest of it's all our residential office zoning. Therefore, offices can be put in there, apartments can be put in. There's a whole bunch of different things, but right now, if someone wanted to create in Dr. Everett's office a retail shop, they couldn't do it.
Right. So are you proposing a friendly amendment to an amendment?
No, I didn't propose anything.
Councilperson Goodrich?
Question. We were talking about this because of the project on the corner there to make the
Sterling and Main.
If we change it to CC, are we now killing that project because now it has to meet the new design standards of downtown
Sterling
having a five-story building?
Or, excuse me, is it Hamlin and Main?
Hamlin. No, he's already got it in the works.
He's non-conforming regardless. Well, his point is, you know.
So if it's already non, why are we doing it?
Why are we making the change?
Yeah.
Well, because my thought is that I don't want to have subsequent properties, you know, keep doing these usage of this property, which eventually we're saying, I think, we eventually want
so
to be part of the
somebody to build a brand new building that is going to be non-conforming.
It's actually going to be valuable to him because he'll have this business right down the downtown
corner. But it won't meet the city's core design standards.
But he can still build it if he's started it out. I've talked to city director about that, and he's already got the.
Yeah, but I'm saying is when his building is finished being built,
right,
and we change the zoning, now his building does not conform to the design standards, and so he's a non-conforming use.
Yeah.
In the downtown.
So we have a lot of non-conforming buildings.
Okay, Councilperson Feria?
Never mind.
Okay. Okay, so that's, you know, we didn't have an amendment to the amendment, so Councilperson Mutchell
was
still on your issue.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I want city staff to, I guess that'd be Director Burnett, you know, the city staff proposed changes to city center zoning. Was there a good reason for that? Or was it just because we had nothing better to do one day? So I like to hear the reason for doing that. And why would we not want to do this?
The original proposal to expand the city center zoning in this area was partly due to the fact that there's been a lot of changeover in staff in the planning department over the last 4 or 5 years. When we look at the existing city center zoning, the city center zoning goes, as you've discussed, to the south, but then ends right here. And the thought was, well, why didn't it extend so that there was uniform boundaries? Some of the planning commissioners and council members at the time that it was adopted said, well, no, the intent was to take it all the way over to Hamlin and Sterling. Looking through the notes in the file as well as the minutes, there wasn't a clear indication one way or another. So the question was asked through the comp plan process. We'd been intending to ask it for a while. What was the intent of this? And was the intent to take it this way? And the only reason why we didn't was because it was not didn't have the appropriate land use designation, or was there some other reason, such as preserving the existing residential neighborhood? So that's why it was proposed. And then following up on that, why should it possibly be? It's outside the floodway or the floodplain. The desire to have common design standards north and south of Main Street, so on and so forth.
Councilperson Mutchler. With support from council change if we narrowed it to more frontage. Is that, as Mel was hinting at earlier, would that
are you proposing an amendment?
No, I just want to hear council's thoughts on that.
Councilperson Berry has her hand up first.
No, go ahead.
The only reason I was in support of going to Guinevere is it seemed like a logical breaking point because it's on the street. I know that one of the main points of doing this was to even it up with the other side of the street so I can see going for just a couple of lots. Does that end up seeming like an odd split, Yori, if you're splitting every single one, you know, two or three lots in, and now you're on lot lines as opposed to separating it at a street?
I think Mel was looking at visually fronting Main, I think.
Yes. You were correct.
Right, and I understand that, which makes it only those first two lots, and I get that, but I was just wondering if there's like repercussions or does it cause a problem because now if we went that direction, you're now having the zone, it's not cutting at a nice, simple line of streets, you know? You're cutting it in between this lot line and that lot line and that lot line.
Well, one of the first things that I learned coming out of college was that in college, you talked about ideal scenarios, where, of course, an ideal scenario, you don't have any incompatible uses next to each other, and everybody is happy. But that's not the reality of the situation, and there are numerous other examples. If the computer worked, that's another example where it's not ideal, where you do have zones that just stretch along the frontage. And, in fact, just on the other side where we have the church along Vista, the downtown zoning only stretches one lot in, so the interior lots are zoned differently from the lots on the boundary. You have a lot of examples of that. So,
but don't you want to keep from doing that?
In an ideal world?
I'd like to live in an ideal world, so I don't know. I'm just saying, are we potentially creating something that you're trying to not do? Does that make sense?
Possibly, but then you weigh what your benefits and disadvantages are. Where is it more appropriate? I think that you yourself said, I understand that you want to have uniform boundaries in your urban growth area, but what if it doesn't make any sense? Where you prioritize, would you rather have the design consistency or would you rather have zones that are in blocks unto themselves? And that's a policy decision. There's no right or wrong.
And I see the point of this is going towards having it match up with what's on the opposite side of the street, so I would be in favor of where Mel's going then, where you only go, you know, a couple of lots up and kind of make that cockeyed little line.
Councilperson Mutchler, then Hanson.
I want to, Council Member Ingram mentioned a particular house that has an appearance that probably wouldn't match up with city center design standards, and our city center design standards are the highest design standards that we have for downtown. And I think that if the downtown corridor is important to us, we want to get that to a CC designation because that's our highest standards, if that's important to us at city. If it's not, then it's not. But at least get the, off of Main Street there. And if we had had that on, you know.
In order to do what we want to do here, you're going to have to amend your motion because the motion is to go to Guinevere.
I'd like to go to Guinevere.
I don't think Sam's hearing what you're saying.
Well, I was just saying that I don't see the purpose of going to Guinevere. I tend to agree more with Mel's interpretation that if we just split it along the lot lines, a couple of lots in, we'd be better off. I don't see any necessary benefit to impact that much property. If what we're concerned with is the visual appearance of the entrance into the downtown core, why go all the way back to Guinevere where you can't see it?
Councilperson Hanson, then Feria.
Well, I'm going to throw a wrench in. I don't want to do the map as a council tonight. This can be docketed again in a year. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
And if we direct staff to, and what I'm hearing is collectively, a lot of people would like to not go all the way to Guinevere. They would rather do the frontage thing. I'd like to see a proposal come from staff. I don't see the urgency. It's not urgent. So I'm not going to support the motion.
Does Mr. Williams has no urgency on his property. That's the only property that you look at.
Yeah, except that his property is not on that side of the street, is it?
Sure. Well, the old Dr. Everett's office, yeah.
Oh, excuse me.
Does he have urgency on that piece?
No, I don't believe he does. The other Dr. thing that Everett. Council might want Which to do Everett's is...
The one with a big retaining wall around it.
There's Mr. Boulos's...
Anderson House.
No.
Sterling and Main.
It's right across the street from Chester's house.
No, you're all the way down.
Across Sterling.
Right there. Okay. Right there. Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, and I felt the same way, Mel, a few weeks ago, that we can just come back at this next year, but I'm just again concerned that there's already the start of development on Main Street that won't be consistent. And hopefully, if we vote no, no one else is going to start changing the frontage in the next
vote. Okay, we have a motion on the floor, seconded by Councilperson Mutchler to go all the way to Guinevere. That's what's on the floor.
Correct.
Any discussion on that motion? Okay, let's vote on that motion. All the way to Guinevere. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So what was that vote? That was
3-2.
No.
Okay. Councilperson Mutchler.
I make a motion to amend the comp plan amendment to just go back two blocks, two lots with the same proposal, but not to Guinevere.
Two lots all the way in between Hamlin and Sterling would be the detail of yours. So between Hamlin and Sterling.
Better description on the other map.
Two lots back from Main. On
boom, boom, boom.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
Sam, enough detail?
Strip the boundary two lots back.
Between Hamlin and Sterling.
Well, not necessarily two, because there's only one.
No, because it's like one big one.
It won't all be two, right?
No.
It will be only one
three,
on the Dr. Everett
three on that one.
Property.
Yeah, so let's go down.
Yuri's computer's not being very happy tonight.
I'm trying to draw a line.
So your amendment would be two lots to the north between Hamlin and Sterling, and then Sterling the entire Williams.
There you go.
So those two.
Two, then one, and drop to two, and then one.
And one with the triangle. So is that kind of
and,
two?
I guess that would be two, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty steady.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Bad. So is that enough detail, Sam? Okay.
I'll second that.
Second on that? Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries 4-1.
Now I have an original amendment out there somewhere.
Yeah, now, so the original amendment, and then we adopted the level C for the whole city. I think we discussed that one enough. Okay, all councilperson Mike.
I know we want to go.
Jesus, Joseph and Mary. What's up with this?
Is it Christmas time? Where's Joseph and Mary here? this is regarding the maximum number of units on the two residential zones, which is the RM 1.510. It was brought to council to raise it up to 40. You remember last month from 27? And we voted no because we thought 40 was not high enough. I'd like to make a motion that the city council directs the planning commission to come back at us with a higher designation of the maximum number of units in a in per acre from the 27 to go up to
But that doesn't have to do with our comp plan amendment that we're doing right now.
You're right about that, but I wanted it to be directed from this.
We have to vote on this. That's not an amendment to the motion that's on the floor.
That
sorry.
Well,
Yuri, that was presented though with the comp plan amendments, was it not?
It was. I think what Councilmember Mutchler is wanting to do is recognizing the will of council, but ensuring that staff and the planning commission do work on amending the zones themselves rather than just have it be an unfunded mandate, more or less, where staff and the planning commission don't do it.
But is a motion really needed for that? I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I'm supportive of having them explore stuff, but I don't know if it's necessary
that's not really
for an amended motion. For
right we, I think we clearly have it on the minutes where we can go to Planning Commission and say.
Here's my concern. Our minutes record that we voted no going 27 to 40, and it appears from the minutes that we were not interested in going to 40, when in fact we were interested in going beyond 40. And that's my concern about what happened in our last meeting.
So could we adjust the minutes tonight with consensus of council rather than an amendment to the comprehensive plan?
If that would bring it to commission that they would look at and bring back to council an ordinance where we can go up to a much higher number.
All right.
Again, just to say real quickly, we raised our buildings to 70 feet, but we didn't raise the units in the residential.
Speed?
He just wants to formally give direction of planning commission. I don't, right?
There needs to be no motion or anything. If there's no objection, if no one wants a vote, you can take that.
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the reasons for this is there have been questions about where policy decisions or directives for new zoning text amendments arise from, whether or not they're from staff, the former community development director, the mayor, council. And this way it would be very clear that it is council's wish to examine increased densities in those zones.
It was a pass motion.
Okay, so seeing no objection to that direction from council, we're going to direct staff to do that. It doesn't take any time.
Thank you. That's all I needed.
Councilperson Goodrich?
So we're voting on the whole package. We can't split out the land use from the transportation and do two separate votes?
No, you cannot. You are adopting one ordinance amending the comprehensive plan.
Question?
If you wanted to separate them out, then you would essentially be saying that the transportation element is not part of the 2010 comprehensive plan and would need to either get back into it as part of the 2011 comprehensive plan or somehow substantiate that there was an emergency that compelled you to do it more than once per year.
I still have issues with the transportation plan, but I don't have any issues with the land part of it.
You had a statement, I don't remember which one, that I really liked. When we were discussing the C or D, you were suggesting a text change.
About making sure that we're going to review it after
right.
The plan.
Right, exactly.
Plan
of action, EIS.
Within the goals.
It was a new policy.
It was already in there.
No, it was on the very last page, page 70. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, but I mean, it's in there for what we're passing tonight. It's not something he wrote in there right now.
Well, yes.
There would be a change.
Well, what he did he took G and, for the most part, repeated it in a new H, but specifically made the new one related to, because G says the city can reassess level of service based on growth and funding.
Now
the new one said based on the results of the planned action EIS, the city would relook at concurrency and other developments.
Is that in there or is that
no,
not?
No, that's
in
something
we would need to amend.
He actually
I would like
added.
To move to amend the
to do what you already said. Second.
Plan to enter the statement that Yori had regarding the planned action EIS.
Right. Second.
Can I read that?
No, sorry.
Yes,
second,
please.
Councilperson Ferriero. Okay, so you're up to speed.
Let me read it.
Amended policy G. Or what would it be? H. It would be new H. As a oh, yeah. So it would actually be a new I. With the completion and adoption of the planned action ordinance, the city will reassess its level of service standards, comma, transportation concurrency management program, comma, and other development regulations based on growth and funding level, period.
That's the one that I remember.
Yeah, I'm
amendment to.
Council understands that amendment. Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? 5-0. Pass.
Now, can we vote on
that? Second, Mr. Ferrier. Yeah.
Main motion?
Forward by Hanson, second, Mr. Ferrier.
Mr. Mayor.
Thirded by Mitchell. Councilperson Goodrich.
I'm having an issue with a fellow council member over here in his comments that he's making about the length of this discussion. I came in here tonight with questions and issues, and it's through this discussion period with not only staff but other council members that I'm going to be able to make my final vote here tonight. And I'm sorry that it took so long, but that's part of the job. We need to discuss things and work through things sometimes. And
I think we need to discuss them at a committee level, at a better level of understanding, so that we don't strike these things down.
But I think this was an important it's an important item. I think it needed the discussion that we had tonight, and I just don't think those comments are appropriate.
Okay, let's move forward to the main motion. Any further discussion on the main motion? Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? 5-0.
What?
All right.
What?
You don't think so? Our city minister is going to sleep over there.
Good point. I've got an hour and a half PowerPoint.
Too bad.
Way to go, Yuri. What are you doing?
And we basically passed E, too. So our public works staff has been unbelievably patient, and we apologize and we thank them for listening through that. So let's start out with our capital improvement project update. We'll first go with Main Street Phase 2, Stage 1. And who's
better than water sewer?
The team of Katie and Luis, or just Katie by herself? As long as you can get to the podium.
Let's stand there and yell, Katie.
Welcome, Katie.
Hello. No, I'm fine. It's been quite a while since I've come and given an update. So I think the last update was in November. So really just a real brief update would be December work has anyway, work in December included installation of the retaining wall, and that was pretty much it. We were kind of riddled with some problems with the weather, so work's been pretty slow. We're still on a work suspension, which means we're not counting working days, and as the contractor's able, he's going out there and doing some different items. Work in January includes doing some of the joint utility trench. That's pretty much 90% done. Some of the items that have been completed in the last 2 weeks would be the underground conversion on a run at the Shell station, and then there's a run that was installed there by KeyBank to Rite Aid. So currently underway, the contractor is doing some work for Into Light. You'll see in the next several weeks, weather dependent of course, the Into Light coming out and pulling wire and installing some of the street lights. PSE's been on site for the last couple of weeks. They've been pulling wire, doing that work so they can get the new underground system heated up so then service conversions can occur. So in the coming weeks, there's some water services that the contractor's been installing. They'll be backfilling the wall and then, again, the service conversions. So I don't know if you guys have any questions.
Questions for Katie? Councilperson Goodrich first.
You said they're going to start putting in streetlights without the sidewalk? Or I was
not on the basis. Yeah, because the light bases, and it'll only happen on the north side of the street, because once the service conversions happen, they have to wreck out the old system, and the old system has the wooden poles with the,
right.
The old cobra heads on it. So until those overhead lines are gone, and they can't put the street lights on the south side of the street, so there will be poles installed on the north side of the street.
And just pour small foundations just for the light fixtures or something? Or?
Yeah, what the contractor's done is they take like a 12-inch pipe and they put it in the ground like a sonotube, mm-hmm. And so the poles are much like the ones on 2nd Avenue where they just direct bury them.
Right. Councilperson Ingram?
Do eat up the underground system?
Yeah, preliminary, I talked to the PSE guy today, and, you know, if everything goes according to plan, then that underground system will be completely heated up by the end of this month.
So. January or February?
This month.
January.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, any further questions for Katie on this issue? No? Seeing none?
Okay.
police station project update, and then we'll do that two things, the Lego Avenue frontage improvement question. Who's going to handle that one?
I'll at least start off here. Yeah, at committee, the one of the issues that was raised with the new police station construction are street frontage improvements on Lego. And the question came up that since it's a city project, we should probably follow many of our own rules and require the improvements. But if you remember, on Lego, there's that new those new fourplexes that were built across from the entrance to the shop that are on the, I guess it'd be the south side of Lego, that already have a sidewalk. So the thought was that we were going to check out the possibility, i.e. the cost, of doing not so much a full three-quarter street improvement on Lego, but at least putting in a sidewalk and curb on the south side linking the intersection of Lego and Washington to that strip of sidewalk that was put in by those fourplexes, and perhaps even wrapping it around the corner on Washington to tie into where the sidewalks stop. There's some cluster mailboxes from some other newer developments that stop, I don't know, a few feet or whatever it might be from the intersection. So the issue is whether it would be preferable to put the sidewalks on that side of Lego. I did put a call into our architect to find out what his plans were, absent this discussion of improvements to Lego, and I've not heard back from him yet. So anyway, that was a discussion.
So we won't proceed forward until we get some better numbers?
Yeah, well, I wanted to find out whether he'd plan on doing anything, and then for the very least, I wanted to ask him to price out what it would cost to do that connectivity on the sidewalks, assuming that as a body, you all are in favor of doing that.
And didn't committee, we went it to council, or did we direct staff to give us a
we need prices, I thought.
We needed prices, and that's why I was going to talk to Cal, and we also wanted to get kind of check the temperature, if you will, of the council to be sure that we weren't getting prices on something you were interested in.
One of the things that did come up in committee was the improvement of the entrance into the police station from the back. I drove up there and took a look at it, and that apron has been improved. It's in place. I don't think beyond the apron they're probably going to do some work into the parking lot, but as the apron comes into Lego, I think they're done. Now, if we were to put the sidewalk on that side of the street, we'd be tearing all of that back out and so forth. I'm very much in favor, if we can keep the cost from being prohibitive, of putting that sidewalk on the what will be the east side of the street and then tying it back into the Washington sidewalk. It just makes sense. I don't know whether we even own the right of way to do that.
Yeah, so we're waiting on cost estimate. Okay. Library project update.
That is slowly moving along. They're moving into design development. There's some civil work that's being done right now, and the project just continues to kind of bubble along. No real issues that have surfaced.
From committee, we've scheduled I've expanded, I'm calling it the Library Neighbors Meeting. I've invited the Senior Center, the Heritage Society, the Old Settlers, the Boys and Girls Club, and that meeting will be at 6 p.m. on the 26th at City Hall with the library representatives.
That's a Wednesday.
Yeah. 26, 6 p.m., City Hall. Okay, so then that kind of rolls into the Pioneer Pavilion. You want to do?
Yeah, that project is proceeding well as well. We're still scheduled to have the building turned over to us on February 28th. They continue to do the interior texturing of the walls and what have you, so they're really getting down to the more visual aspects of the project. So it's pretty much on budget and on time, so we're going to continue pushing.
Question?
Okay.
Were you able to get the outlet for the Heritage Society asked for?
Yeah, the Heritage Society wanted to add an exterior outlet behind where the new commercial kitchen is going to be, because out in the yard, if you will, of the park itself, there is not a huge, but a sizable fir tree that I understand that they put Christmas lights on. So they wanted to have an outlet right at that corner. So we talked to the contractor. They're currently pricing it because the drywall's already gone up. But it's a question of whether they can do it. It's just a question of cost of, you know, fishing the line down and for how much it's going to be.
So moving forward. Okay, G, Council Committee and Intergovernmental Assignments. Typically we do these every 2 years. So I believe, and my research is the only one that basically needed to be voted on, that has to be voted on yearly, is my assignment to COG, which is later. I don't believe any other assignments in terms of WTA or any other thing is there. Councilperson Mutchler has asked to add a liaison to Planning Commission. We've never had that. It really wouldn't go into a problem of him attending. It would be a liaison. You could attend anyway if you wanted to. We could add that title to it. So that's the only addition that I've done a change to. Councilperson Perry.
Don't we regularly have a city staff person that attends the Planning Commission? I guess I always kind of thought of that as a liaison. Is somebody that's from the city that's attending these different group meetings.
Well, you can look and say, but the city staff isn't really representative of the council, so the council is a different body. I don't see a problem. Councilperson Hanson?
I move to add the Planning Commission and to have Mr. Mutchler, who usually attends anyway, be the liaison. This would be for a year until the new assignments come around next year.
And then we'll, I guess, approve all the other...
And included in my motion is to reappoint Gary Jensen as the COG rep.
I will second that as well.
All right. All in favor, Councilperson Mutchler?
And just to let you know, I have been the liaison to Community Resource Center. I'm not quite sure why I didn't. I've been doing it all year.
Oh, okay.
So my name is not open, but John. So I've been it, so if we can just confirm that.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Main Street Project. Douglas to Church. Planter right-of-way strip discussion. Katie, again.
Yeah, and I apologize. I didn't have the exhibit. So, and then the copy machine wasn't really helping me very much. So,
I
ended up. Oh, there are two babies.
These projects, when they're under design, there's quite a long process to get them to the point where you can go to construction. And we discussed briefly in committee just a rough outline of the schedule for the items that need to be taken care of in order to get us to the point where we can go to construction. And so right now, design work is underway on Main Street, and the design engineers have pretty much determined, you know, the width of the road, where all the utilities are going, and that sort of thing. So our next item...
Are we caught up here so we can pay attention to Katie here, or what?
I'll just talk loud.
No, that's not appropriate. Are we caught up?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Just piecing our puzzle together. Okay.
So anyway, we're to the point now where we really need to start moving forward on obtaining right-of-way. And in order to determine how much right-of-way we need, then we need to know whether or not it's appropriate, or if council thinks it's appropriate to include or disclude planter strips along Main Street. So the first page of your packet there shows the two street sections. One includes the planter strips in between the curb and gutter section and the sidewalk section versus no planter strips. Now, it's been determined already that this next section of Main Street from Douglas to Church Road will not include undergrounding the utilities, so the utility poles will be relocated, you know, on the outside of the sidewalk. So staff, I guess, is asking for direction with the recommendation to council that we move forward to obtain right-of-way needed to include the planter strips. Right now, this project, based on the six-year transportation plan, is estimated at a $4.6 million. And by adding planter strips, the estimated right-of-way acquisition cost is $320,000 on a $4.2 million project, and then by adding the planter strips, the right-of-way acquisition would cost approximately $50,000 to $100,000 right-of-way acquisition plus the construction of the planter strips. So,
what's that total then? $100,000 right-of-way.
Well, right now we're at $320,000. So, because of right-of-way acquisition, it's a negotiated thing, so it's really hard to determine. So, $320,000 plus $50,000. To 100,000, so 370 to 420,000.
So their
right-of-way
decision,
acquisition.
Their monetary decision tonight is
100 grand.
100 grand.
Just
right.
The right-of-way.
Okay.
And then you'd have to add on for
construction. Just wanted to clarify it. Councilperson Feria, then Ingram.
So the yellow crisscross part I see is the planter is the right-of-way that you have to acquire. If I'm looking at the colored pictures. The yellow crisscrosses that are on the south side of Mountain View. Oh, I didn't.
Right.
The legend's not on the same page I'm looking at. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The proposed right-of-way. Okay. So did the people that live in these places, they haven't seen any of these maps yet because it hasn't been passed yet here. Is that right?
They've seen a version of that. We had a community meeting where we talked about several different projects, and this is one of those, and I'm not sure what version.
I guess it's like I'm looking at one of them. Is that the one house? It looks like it goes right through their front porch or something. I might just be the dimension, you know, kind of the way I'm looking. It's on the one that looks like this.
The one right by Shannon?
Yeah, it's underneath Shannon. It's on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
Yeah, or even the one on the Shannon. So sometimes that, you know, kind of the way it overlays, the way I'm looking at it might not necessarily be how it looks, but.
Not a house, that's a big.
This one right here?
I'm looking at a different one.
I think that's Mr. Loenberger's house. Isn't
this
it?
One, down
no,
here.
It's
not on Shannon.
No, it's not on Shannon. It's on Main Street.
Gotcha.
Gary
from right.
Shannon.
Yeah.
So it looks like it's someone's house, and it looks like it goes to their front porch. How does that work?
What?
I mean, is that really that specific?
Are you on the corner of Shannon?
No, I'm down Main Street, down here.
Go Shannon and then go south.
On the bottom right-hand corner, it says sheet
down
203, 103.
I'm right here.
What's that sheet say?
Oh, this one's 203.
Okay,
I'm
just on the house. It's just the blue line's touching the house almost.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to tell. I was just wondering, how does that really, I mean, you go and, I mean, you're building stuff right up to somebody's porch or something? How does that work?
That's picking up right away.
Just kind of curious.
Because here's the sidewalk.
Yeah, you want to jump in there.
Luis, you want to address that? Because you've already reviewed.
If you look at the second, the drawing,
the one with the people on it?
Planter strip. It says Main Street, 44-foot roadway, typical street section with planter strip.
Uh-huh.
If you look on the right side, on some of these areas, the road, for example, here, it's the property's lower than the road. So
okay.
What happens is, in order to put the sidewalk in and put some fill in, we end up creating a higher area, and the slope is what you're seeing. For the right-of-way, it's the slope off the back of the walk.
So it's not like the sidewalk is right up on our porch. I'm seeing I have this additional kind of
slope
that
exactly.
builds it up.
Those orange lines underneath the sidewalk?
Yes, that is correct.
Under the hash marks?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
you see that?
You see the sidewalk.
The orange lines are underneath.
Yeah.
Right here.
Okay.
That we would obtain right-of-way all the way out to that yellow line. Because sometimes in order to be able to construct these things, you have to obtain a construction easement. So So okay. In this instance, you know, we might not need to own all of that property, just at least obtain an easement to be able to install the improvements.
Okay, I guess I was just curious, you know, looking at where it looks like lines are going right through people's property or right on their porch, you know, kind of how that, do we really do that?
Hansen mentioned, yeah. Pay attention to the orange line. That
because that's where the sidewalk is.
Okay, let's stop you all for a second.
Thank you.
I need a motion to extend to 9:30.
What else do we have to cover?
Going to take that long?
No, but I don't want to make another motion.
Sometimes you do it till 9:30, and then we take that long no matter what.
I'll go to 9:15.
Okay, there's a motion.
Second at 9:30.
Okay, a motion first, second to go until 9:30. The councilperson Ferry motion. Councilperson Mutcher kindly seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries.
How does it carry? What are you counting?
Denied it.
Three of us
three.
Denied it.
I didn't hear.
I move that we extend the council meeting until 9:20.
Seconded.
9:20.
Keep going. Second.
Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. All right, carries.
See, I saved you all 10 minutes.
I'm going to amend that.
So we just need a motion.
Now can I
keep going?
Can I ask my
question? I will make a motion to do what you're trying to do here. Obtain right-of-way and planner strip.
To approve the planner strips. That's what you're asking.
That's what I'm trying to do, yes.
I haven't asked my question yet.
Okay, Councilperson Ingram. Well, just let me get a second. Can I get a second so we continue?
Sorry. What?
Okay, Councilperson Hansen, a second. We'll continue. Councilperson Ingram.
Well, I'm just curious why we would do this when it doesn't match any of the rest of Main Street. Just a curious question. I mean, this is not matching anything else we're building. The current phase one, we're not doing planner strips on it. Now, all of a sudden, from just west of Douglas, we're going to have these nice planner strips. Why? If we're not doing this currently...
I'll let staff answer that first.
If we're not doing this currently on the Main Street project, why do we want to do
it on this? My first thing is, well, we've changed the... You know, we're not doing underground. We've also changed the street lights. So it really is a change from downtown, the built environment downtown, to this area. That's what I would say.
Which is going to cost us more money to maintain. I'm seeing ongoing costs here way over and above just the construction of a couple of planter strips. We've seen experience down at the Riverwalk with the landscape architects who did everything possibly humanly wrong they could do, and we've had to go down there and pretty much rebuild that whole landscaping system down there. I don't know. I just don't see the sense.
To answer your question about maintenance, traditionally the city requires that adjacent property owners maintain.
Good luck with that.
Well, yeah, that's the policy. Whether or not that happens is takes effort.
Councilperson Hansen.
And I want to make a note that I abstained or didn't participate in the discussion, but you did establish platter strips on Church Road. Church Road will intersect with Main Street, and it will be a continuous. The second point that I'd like to make is it wasn't that there wasn't a desire on a lot of people's parts to landscape Main Street. There's still a hope, I know, at least on one tree board member's part, that there will be some tree plantings along Main Street in the phase one. There has been a lot of discussion about that. And I'll make a third point while I've got the floor, and then I'll shut up. And that is that all of us have received huge compliments, I'm sure, about how we did the Second Avenue entrance to town. I hear people say this constantly. I drive that not just because it's easy to get home. It's because it's such a beautiful entrance into the community. And I think that anything we can do to beautify satisfies our...
Person much sure, and then Goodrich.
Thank you. Katie, the cost of the additional right-of-way might be an additional $100,000 perhaps. What is the estimate cost of the ultimate landscaping, trees, et cetera, that would go in those planter boxes? Because I need to think the total amount here.
Right. Depending on the level of landscaping that we have estimated, that is another $50,000 to $100,000, whether or not you put in grass.
Okay. So I'm really making a $200
$200,000 decision, in essence, because once you one to 200.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Councilperson Goodrich.
That was going to be my question: is what we're looking at total? Is that including construction costs? That $100,000.
That's a real rough estimate, just because it's, I mean, you know, pretty variable. Right.
Okay.
Yep, we do.
Okay, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Okay, motion carries 5-0.
Thank you.
Okay, fee code adjustment. This one should be pretty simple. Hopefully you got my statement on the issue. I think it's a smart issue. I hope this is a fee that we don't ever have to adhere to people, but we, from this, we continue our education program and move forward without everyone having this fee. Councilperson Ingram.
I move to approve the fee change for the water meters as proposed.
Seconded.
Okay, move to second. Further discussion? Councilperson Goodrich.
It was determined that the $100 thing would not cover the cost of folks to go out there and change it.
And it's an hour's worth of money, $100. It's what we typically charge in our fee schedule. We have indications from the hardware manufacturer that the meter vendor, that they're so convinced that meters don't break in the way of overcharging the homeowner, that they would replace these gratis. Now, we have to confirm that. So we think the hardware cost, though, is going to kind of go away, the hardware cost of the city. So basically, it's to cover the labor.
And that does cover the labor.
It's an hour's worth.
True cost cover.
But that's not the efficient way to handle the problem. This is just a step. Right. The way we are handling this situation is not productive for our employees.
Yeah. Question.
Chris, yes.
Why is my name on here? Are you, why is my name on here? Are you going out of town or something that I don't know about?
What?
The ordinance.
Based off an old ordinance. You're welcome.
The pro tem was on
this person.
Yeah. Yeah, I like this. To me, it's getting rid of the add insult to injury. You know, I think it's a good thing to do.
And a much better education. And I got two phone calls last week. I don't know where this rumor started, that we don't read our meters, that we just guess.
What?
No, I heard it, and I heard it from a council member. It's like, well, you can have to tell me which council member.
We just charge you whatever we want.
Yeah.
Charge you whatever.
Yes. Well, okay, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? 5-0 appears to be. Okay, Mayor reports. Quickly, Pinewood Derby is January 29th, 10 a.m., Jackson Road Church. I need to assign numbers to whoever's doing it, so let's go. Brent, are you spying
car? I will not be in town.
Okay, Brent's no. John?
Unavailable. Sorry.
John, no. Paul?
You're on your own.
Oh, no. Okay,
this is
good. Mel.
I said no from the beginning.
No. Gosh, good. So I guess Stephen Lloyd pick up.
Yep. Okay. Assign him a number.
Assign him a number.
Okay. All right, next one. Arts Commission. I have two openings on the Arts Commission. We have two people dropped. Tough, frustrating, because we're not getting money, but I have two openings if anybody's looking. Alcoa.
What are the ones that dropped, please?
Hovander and Jim Dixon before that. Alcoa. Had a great meeting with Alcoa. Alcoa wanted me to thank the city council for all their letters. They wanted to thank you. They like their future. And they want to tell you that this is just the step in a three-stage process. One was getting an electrical contract. Number two was convincing the parent corporation to open up the other pot line. Number three is they would operate more efficiently with three pot lines, of which they have the facilities. So they are not done growing. They don't intend to stop growing, and they will be coming to you for more help. They're moving in the right direction. So great future.
More trucks.
Okay, meeting with the school. Obviously, you guys we've discussed the Alder and Second stop sign situation. That meeting is going to happen next Wednesday with the school district involved. The one I'd really like some council to attend. And it's time you learn about this project because this is the year they'll probably go public for a vote. The Nooksack Loop Trail
It's February 15th, and they want to tell it the whole story to our city council. So February 15th, 5 p.m. at City Hall.
Bless
you. At least like parks members, Nooksack Loop Trail is an exciting thing. We have a major component to it.
Take when we do the results, I'll be on the highway development.
Too bad for you.
Too bad for me.
Okay, you should know about the EDI funds. Your city manager worked very hard on the EDI funds. We'd like to administer the program in terms of where we lower the impact fees for low-income housing. The funds would come out of the county EDI fund. That fund balance for that segment right now is just short under $9 million. Greg presented it to the county council. The county council, for a lot of reasons, several of them political, decide to move it to a committee. If a county council person calls you, I urge them to call you today. I sent a rather aggressive letter to the county council saying the premise is they'd like it to go to a committee and really discuss the whole EDI funding. Well, they've been discussing EDI funding. They've been discussing affordable housing for years and years. We've had the Affordable Housing Task Force. It met for 3 years, did nothing. This is a portion that the city of Ferndale led. All the other city mayors approved it. There's money in the account. It's sitting there just earning interest that goes to specifically just the county. It's a tax that basically all pay for it. It's a great way to give an incentive to build some affordable housing in Ferndale and other communities. The fact that they want to change how EDI funding is going, is that's fine, but don't vote no on this issue, and that's the issue. Move this one forward. Today at Small Cities, all the other mayors agreed to again call them, hey, move this issue forward. So if you get a call, hey, move it forward. Let's try to build some homes. Some of you people have proposed lowering impact fees. This is one great way for affordable housing to build some homes. So I'm a little sensitive about it. We'll start on this next billing, the water bill credit for Good News Fellowship Church. You got the information on that. As you see customers, Good News Fellowship Church really does want to help some people. It's not just that they go hand them the money. We tell the people, call these people. They'd like to do some financial counseling. They have $2,400 in bill relief. They'd like to work with people. Great program. So if you see someone complaining about their bill, there's a chance to do it. Again, I've asked before, and this is my new thing for 2011, there's no way that you as a council person can understand really what our police do and what our court people do unless you attend court on a Friday. You can't get the feeling of it until you sit back there in court and see what they do. And for people to not understand what our police do or not understand what our court do, it's a big deal, guys. It's a big deal. And you can't understand it until you're here on a Friday seeing it. It's a three-ring circus. And anybody that doesn't think Ferndale doesn't have a lot of unsavory characters really needs to attend it because you see a different part of Ferndale.
Every Friday?
Every Friday, 9 o'clock, just come in, sit at the back, and hopefully you don't sit next to some people that scare you because typically I sit here and I get scared.
So I shouldn't bring my two-year-old with me?
No.
And only misdemeanors.
Sorry, I'm sensitive, but you can't criticize police until you attend that segment and the two people that aren't here to attend that. So hopefully you're right at the nose. I'm getting older. I'm getting late and getting grumpy. Public Works, we still intend to do a water sewer tour. We cut that off last year, so we're still going to do it. Okay, that's it for mayor reports, council reports. I'm on a roll. Okay.
30 seconds.
Department reports. Treasurer.
Nothing.
Administrator.
Nothing.
Planning.
Nothing.
No, be
just
quiet.
Three.
Public Works. Assistant clerk, new clerk. No. Nothing. Please. Okay, great. Motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Very good. Good time, man. Only because I was aggressive.
Did I just sue Miraculous off?
I don't know. What was the Planning Commission approval on term limits?
Yeah.
What was that? I don't know what that was.
What does it say on the planning commission approval?
Well, she kind of was talking. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I knew we were just approving their terms.
I don't know. Well, yeah, you know, and after, especially after Lucy's gotten out of this, everybody kind of clarified that.
No, I'm
not on the 6-year plan right now.
Oh, yeah. I have it still. Probably. No, no, I'm saying he probably talked to right
from the
I don't know.
Good idea.